It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here in studio. He brought his boss. So everybody, be nice. We're going to talk about the crappy Olympics coverage, what's wrong with journalism today, and all the new stuff Google has brought us. It's time for Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 236, recorded February 12th, 2014. Who's your daddy? This Week in Google is brought to you by 99designs, the world's largest graphic designs marketplace. 99designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 280,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/twig to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/twig. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, visit squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG2. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show that covers, you know, we use the word Google very loosely in this title.
Thanks to Gina.
Anything we want to talk about, right?
Right.
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 Hey, look who's here, Jeff Jarvis. He's
I'm not
pink.
My cameras usually make me very pink, but Jeff, I'm not.
See, I'm alive.
Jeff is in town, and it's nice to have him. Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism at the City University of New York, the author of Public Parts and What Would Gutenberg Do? No, that's another book you haven't written yet.
Yeah, no.
It's good to have
not
you.
Not a bad idea. Good,
nice
good
to
be
see
here.
You.
It's wonderful to be here. I love being here with my guy.
And you have brought your boss. Sarah Bartlett is also here. Currently the dean of the School of Journalism at the City University of New York. But I was just, first of all, somebody in the chat room said, oh, Sarah's book is great. You've got to read The Money Machine.
That's nice.
So you have I have fans.
I have at least one fan out there.
This is the story of the guys who invented the leverage buyout, practically, Kohlberg, Kravis, and Roberts, and really the beginning of the end of the financial markets. But it also says here that you were a reporter at Fortune, Business Week, and the New York Times, assistant managing editor at Business Week for 6 years, and editor-in-chief of Oxygen Media.
That's all true.
They didn't lie.
No, it's factually accurate.
When did you go into academia?
I started at Baruch College, which is part of the City University Network, in 2002.
You decided that journalism was over, or I guess not?
No, I needed an income that was steady and stable.
You needed a job. You chose academia. Okay. Well, anyway, that's great. And was it your inspiration to bring Jeff?
I can take no credit for it. He was the first professor hired at the school, and I was the second.
Oh, perfect.
I could thank him maybe for not, you know, shutting the door on me. I guess.
But well, it's great to have
now
you.
Now the tables have turned, and I can inflict whatever pain I like.
So it's nice to have you both in studio. We're going to ask what you're doing out here, besides fleeing the snow. Poor Gina. Gina has not fled. She's bundled up in mom's basement.
I am. Hello.
Hi,
I'm
Gina.
Gina, doing a podcast from my mother's basement. Yes, I'm owning it.
You
see my mom's tchotchkes up here.
The Jets blanket again, please.
The Jets low. It's all the way across the room. Oh, yes, okay. I'm surrounded here by all my mom's old pictures, and my mom loves me. And I'm here in her house.
The irony of all this is mom is in Florida.
Yeah, oh, yeah. She's like, are you watering the plants, honey? Good. Are you keeping warm? Good. Okay. There's extra snow boots in the closet. Make sure you lock the door at night.
So when we left you last week, you were running off to buy your house in Park Slope. Is that done?
Yes, I was. It is done. The closing is done. I am officially very much in debt. Happily in debt and responsible for shoveling the snow tomorrow, which will be fun.
You forgot about that part.
Yes, I'm a brand new homeowner. Really, really excited. We're not quite moved in yet because our stuff is still in a truck or getting loaded into a truck on its way from San Diego, but we'll be moved in soon. And it's going to be, there's a lot of home improvement in my future. So I'm very excited.
Well, here we are gathered together. I think we're going to spend a little more time than we usually do talking about journalism, the future of journalism.
Uh-oh, watch out, watch out. Get the coffee now, chat room.
No, I love this stuff. And as I watch, you know, NBC botch the Olympics yet one more time, spending more time on Bob Costas's pink eye than on some of the stories in the Olympics.
That's what that is? God.
It's so disgusting.
It really is.
This morning on the Today Show, they actually interviewed him about his pink eye. And I thought, this is not news.
No.
Anyway, I guess when it's the Olympics, it's not news either, really.
Well, they edited the opening ceremony again in two ways. I didn't know this. The AP called me. They took out the human rights statement from the opening.
Interesting.
Which is a problem. They did the same thing in the London Olympics where they bollocks it up.
Why did they also do that? Oh, because it's too boring for Americans.
That's what they thought. Yeah, I guess. They also took out the police choir.
So this made me mad because Lisa said, hey, did you see the Russian police choir singing Daft Punk? I said, I saw them singing the Russian national anthem. What do you mean Daft Punk? She said, no, they did. I said, no, that's a mashup. She said, no, they did. And yes, online you can see it, but it was not on TV. Okay, so I wasn't crazy.
You weren't crazy.
I thought, what the hell happened?
The Associated Press called me to talk about this and said, and they were trying
to
find
somewhere. Why did they cut that out?
I think it was just a dumb mistake because they said it got millions of views on YouTube.
Yeah.
And so they said.
They don't understand their audience.
No, they don't. They don't. How could you miss that? Plus, the great thing about all these things, it's these, and I say this with no disparagement, but it's these gay moments in the Olympics that you want to celebrate. You want to say, come on, guys.
I just thought it was really funny because this is the Russian police choir. I presume these are all policemen. They certainly have
the greatest hats in the world.
The big
is
Russian
Chad,
police
hats.
Is Chad
looking for it now?
They're wonderful. And then what you see is the younger guys are really getting into Daft Punk.
Right.
I don't know if they understand the lyrics. I'm here to get lucky. I'm going to stay all night to get lucky.
What's hard to understand about that?
Yeah. Maybe it didn't translate. I mean, this is a song about getting laid. Anyway, they're singing that. And then the older guys who are clearly, you know, Gorbachev era, maybe even Khrushchev era.
God knows what they've done.
Are kind of like standing there like puzzled and maybe a little put out.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. It's fun to watch, and why NBC cut that out?
Well, they have this chance to edit the whole thing.
Pardon me?
Wasn't there also a technical glitch where one of the rings, the lit rings, didn't open? And
yes.
Didn't they edit in
no.
the version
no,
from
the Russians
practice?
Did.
Putin asked NBC to Photoshop the ring, and NBC, at least in this respect, said no.
Yes.
Okay.
At least
showed
some integrity and said no. However, the official Russian version included the rings opening up from the rehearsal instead of the failed ring.
Right, where it worked.
Ring.
Okay, so we saw
and immediately you saw the T-shirts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the jokes about the fifth ring came out.
There we have. Okay. This is the Russian police choir. You can turn it up a little bit because I think we should enjoy it. We should all enjoy Daft Punk as performed by 100 straight Russian policemen. Except for that one.
So this is the only clip that I have. Everything else has been taken down by...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
By
like,
Daft Punk?
Yeah. So, like, you know, this
that's
version...
That's why NBC didn't show it.
This looks like the full version.
They didn't pay for the rights.
It was a rights issue.
Yeah.
Now we
and it's
right,
like,
you are. Okay. It's
it was
all
a rights
the money.
Issue.
Of course.
So my, you know... Okay, this isn't really This Week in Google at this point, but what the hell? Am I wrong in seeing a little bit of bias on the part of American media, anti-Russian bias? I'm thinking of, before the Olympics began, the Sochi Problems Twitter feed and all of these...
The Canadian did that, let's be clear.
But many of these pictures turned out to be spurious. Many
yes,
of these
they
stories
did.
Turned
they
out
did,
to be spurious.
Right?
And then it seems like even as we've gone through the Olympics, there's kind of this... Maybe it's hereditary because they were our enemies for so long during the Cold War. Maybe it has, I think nominally it has to do with the anti-gay propaganda.
I think not. And Putin. I don't think Putin is beloved.
But
I think
it seems
Pussy
a strong,
Riot
a strong bias.
Brilliant
Pussy
PR
Riot
timing in being
deal.
The U.S. and on Colbert. Did you see Pussy Riot on Colbert?
Amazing. Oh, I didn't. Oh, that
amazing.
Must be
amazing. Amazing.
Did they sing? What did
how
they
you
do?
Can,
no,
how you can be funny in simultaneous translation.
That's awesome.
And they both sides of it did it. It's
That's
amazing.
That's awesome.
It's just amazing.
Wow.
So
I got to look that up.
I mean, I guess this isn't then a real surprise that we would have somewhat of a negative slant on.
I got to admit, emotionally, I'm rooting against Putin.
Yeah.
You know?
But you hear all the stories about... It's so warm there. Everything's terrible. The hotel handles fell. By the way, we didn't hear anything more after the Olympics started about hotel door handles falling off. It just stopped.
Maybe they're out working.
Maybe they fixed it.
Yeah.
So I don't.
Well, the greatest story is that was it the luge guy who had to break through the door?
Yeah,
I mean, that one
punched through the door.
Yeah, punched the door. Right, right.
I don't. I think that reflects worse on us than it does.
I think it does. I think you're right.
The door won't open. Pow. anyway, there's not a whole lot of stories there, except there is one text story there, which was that Richard Engel, who normally I think is a very good correspondent at NBC, did a story which seemed to me to fail one of the critical tenets of good journalism. You tell me, Sarah Bartlett, you're a dean of journalism, that it sounded like he went into the story knowing what it was going to be about, knowing what story he wanted to tell in the face of all facts. He told it. And they did it with editing. So this is the story he did about hacking hackers in Russia. And the premise of the story going in was if you bring a don't bring any electronics to Russia because it will be hacked immediately. Now, he did mention that we're not in Sochi. We're in Moscow, 1,000-plus miles away. They brought in a guy from an antivirus company, which right there is probably a mistake, but he's a technical expert. He set up a Windows machine and a Mac machine. No updates. They also got an Android phone. And what happened, although you didn't see it on camera, was he had Richard Engel go to malicious sites on the Windows and the Mac machine, download and run software. What they showed on screen was he didn't do anything. It just turned on the computer and now it's hacked. Now, maybe our Android fans will understand even better on this. He had him in the Android phone go to the setting. You know that setting, Gina, where you check the box that says allow third-party downloads. Yep. He unchecked that box, which checked by default. Not checked by default. He checked
it. And it said, are you sure?
And it gets a big warning. This could be dangerous. And then he went and downloaded a known malicious app.
Okay.
And then all of this is edited out. Then he shows that he's been hacked. So, in other words,
it proves nothing.
He did stupid things on all three systems, known stupid things, and edited out the doing of them. And by the way, you could do this sitting right here, every one of those. It has nothing to do with Russia or Russian hackers. Yeah. So it felt like a hit piece. I think Engel is a better journalist than that.
Total lack of transparency to what he was doing.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons we know what he did is because the Trend Micro guy, expert, I think, felt guilty about it and blogged it all.
Oh, is that?
Said, oh, by the way, here's what really happened. That's a bad precedent to set, where I'm going to prove a story true and I'm going to edit my piece to make it.
Yeah, and then I'm going to hide my tracks.
They have, to this day, as far as I know, not in any way apologized, despite a lot of criticism, not only from us, but from security experts, the Trend Micro expert, and others. So, although a lot of people felt like the worst part was, go ahead and show this, Chad, him ripping the box open. Richard Engel apparently doesn't understand how to open a MacBook Air box. He tore into it like it was a FedEx package.
Oh. That's just wrong. That was wrong.
That's aesthetically violating.
that's where the big cringe factor was. I don't know. I guess we can't. It's fine. We can't find that. I feel like, to me, this is part of a larger pattern of let's figure out how to make Russia look as bad as possible.
Well, but is it also a way to make technology look bad, too? Is it a chance to scare people
that
about how dangerous
panic.
Technology
yeah.
is? Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's sort of broader than that. I think there's sort of failures of journalism that we see every day, and we just happen to notice them more because everybody's focusing on the Olympics.
Right.
But these are problems that we see across the board.
This is
bad journalism.
Standard operating procedure for networks. Oh, isn't that hurt?
That
he just tore it open the box.
Oh.
No, these are carefully made.
Oh. there's 20 designers who designed that back box flap.
Yeah.
Oh.
All right. I mean, I don't know. There's not much more to say about that. It's not really.
That's TV news sucks.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
That's pretty much what it is.
It also is kind of a truism that if you are an expert in a field and you watch television's version of it, it will always be wrong and confused.
Well, that's also the news magazine problem, I think. Whenever I bought a Time magazine thinking, oh, I'll be interested in that cover story because it's what I know, it, of course, was always just the stones giving water. So,
yeah.
You know.
Well, there's a good example. Time just published an article about quantum computing in which they, you know, kind of said, this is going to change the world as soon as they can make it work. It's just like cold fusion.
Yeah.
As soon as... As soon as somebody invents it, will you let me know? And then we'll talk about what it can do. All right, let's continue on. It's interesting. Actually, Google had a little bit of a response to the anti-gay propaganda law in Russia. They changed their homepage.
Yeah, it was a big old,
they rarely do
big old
to
rainbow.
Advocate, and they did it.
You think that's what it was? It was about that.
Well, it's presumed. You know what? Though I looked at it again, and it's not. Is it really the rainbow colors?
It is the rainbow. I actually figured it out. Yes, red, okay. Orange, yellow, blue, green, indigo, violet.
Right. That, but
it's
a little subtle.
It's a little subtle.
Yeah. I thought that might be the Google colors. Is that the Google colors?
No. I wonder whether it was the colors of sport tabs or something, but no, that'd be the case. So,
it's the rainbow.
Qualifies. It's the rainbow.
And what country was it wore rainbow uniforms?
Germany, although they said that was.
We just like the rainbow.
Yeah.
It's not a
they
statement.
Just want them to be ugly.
We just feel that it. Yeah, we had to compete with Ralph Lauren's ugly sweater. so we had to do something ugly. There it is.
They are really ugly. There's a great a Twitter handle, 9, and he went crazy on this. What has happened to Germany?
I thought the German skaters had lovely little shifts. That's my thought. Hey, good news. Here it is. A Nexus 7. Jeff Jarvis can finally use his on the Verizon network.
Well, we'll see. Because
what?
They're now going to sell. I'm not saying no. They've announced finally that they're going to sell them. Or I think it's been leaked that they're going to sell them.
Right.
What I don't know is when I walk in with my Nexus 7 that I didn't buy there.
Oh, they won't.
I don't know. That's my last test. What are they going to do? 6 months. 6 friggin' months. It took these bozos to say that this works on their network when it takes 2 seconds to put a friggin' SIM in and it works fine.
My request, Jeff, is that you wear Google Glass and stream this interaction live.
Stream it.
Say, hey, this is what you're talking about in your Medium series. I want you to stream this interaction with a Verizon salesperson live on Google Plus. Okay, please, and let us know beforehand what time it's going to be so we can all tune in. Have time to see what happens.
Do you? I mean, you approached the FCC. You wrote to the FCC.
I have a complaint on file with the FCC, which I still think is valid because Verizon did not. It took 6 months to maybe follow the dictates of the auction for LTE spectrum.
So this was part of their agreement that if they were to buy the 700 megahertz spectrum, the C band, that they would be an open network that band.
Right. And Google, don't forget, forced that.
Right.
When Google entered into the auction for that spectrum, Google put in the requirements for openness and then pulled out. That's why Verizon got it.
Right.
So they didn't follow the dictates, and I think they should still be punished.
What's the FCC's response to you was, we'll look into it?
Silence.
Nothing?
Nothing. Not done.
They didn't respond at all?
Nothing.
Oh.
They get so many letters from Jeff, it's probably hard enough.
Put it in the Jarvis basket. You know what that is, right? Yeah. The round file.
That's not in priority inbox.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna say where it was in our trip here. I've heard of a startup of a technology company in this area that tries to ban garbage cans.
Okay, why?
I guess because there's too much garbage.
Too much garbage.
Okay, but that doesn't eliminate the garbage, just the place to put it.
The person who told me said it kind of motivates you. You get that Mac. Maybe you think about tearing the box off before you take it in the office. You don't have to throw it away because you can't find somebody to throw it away.
So you throw it away at home.
I know.
It doesn't eliminate the garbage as your
point.
No,
it doesn't.
Or you throw it on the floor. I mean, garbage.
Maybe it's that horrible addition on every email. Think before you print.
Then, Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I hate that.
I hate that.
Yeah.
First of all, who the hell prints email? Somebody, apparently.
That's a signal that the person who's sending you the email is not very savvy.
Yes.
William Randolph Hearst III you'd send him an email, his secretary would print it, bring it to him. He's very technically literate, too, but this was just like,
service.
I think this
I know
service.
People like that.
Yeah. And then he'd read it, and he'd write a response, and then she'd go type it in. I think he's gone beyond that, by the way, now. I think he actually uses email now. Will's a good friend.
So I'll report back. I will go into a Verizon store, and I will report back. Now, the Google Glass.
Someone should tape it. You're absolutely right.
Gina, Google Glass, I think I mentioned last week that I talked to somebody from the team after my rant about that, and I'm seeing the team in Mountain View on Friday.
Oh, excellent.
So I'll see what that could be a little uncomfortable.
They're more responsive than the FCC.
That's darn true. Darn true.
No, but
I got priced my lenses for the Google Glass, $435.
Yikes.
Oh.
So it's $250 for the frame.
Two and a quarter for the frame, $1,500 for the glass. And $435. You add it up. I don't know how to.
Seven or eight. That's a lot. It's like $2,300, something like that.
For
a pair of glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last night we had Jacob Applebaum on All About Android, and he just got his custom frames, and he got his lens fitted, and he has his V2 glass, and he loves it.
He does.
So I referred our viewers to back to last week's show to hear your rant.
Well,
to get
Jacob's somebody I got to listen to.
Yeah. To your credit. Gina said, hey, well, Jeff hates him. You should watch Twig and see. But Jeff said all the things that you didn't Jacob said all the things that you didn't like. Jason Applebaum. He said they shouldn't bend because one side wouldn't bend and the other side would, and that would be crazy. You know,
did he like the gigantic 5-gallon case?
We didn't talk about the case. You know, he's a pretty he's been in touch with the developers, and he's an engineer really himself. So I think that he has empathy for the developers, yes, and how difficult a problem it is to install a hinge, for example, in the electronics, which is obviously not something that a user or a consumer should worry about. And he did say that when it's at the point that it's a consumer product, it absolutely, the arm should bend. There has to be a better solution than what they have right now. But he was sort of marveling at the fact that they were able to get it as far as they have for now. So this is just...
It's one hell of a Newton.
Yeah.
I still hold that.
Sarah,
yes.
What happens when Jeff wears glass into the office? Do you throw him out?
Not at all, but people want to borrow them all the time.
Really?
Yeah. My students are crazy. In fact, my son told me, don't come home if I don't have Google Glass.
They sell it at the swag store.
Yeah. I keep telling him, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion Google will never make a consumer product of this.
So.
I think this is more like Google 411, where they're collecting data, but it's such a prototype. I think there's so many problems associated with it. I can't imagine Google trying to sell this as a consumer product.
Social experiment?
Not even that. I mean, you know, Google wants data. And
what
I think
data do they get from this?
Well, they're going to how people use wearables, what the reaction is to various form factors. You saw it now. Google,
but they would only do that if they wanted to sell something into the consumer market that was a wearable.
Well, remember that data to Google is valuable in many ways besides an actual
if
product.
Somebody else makes the wearable, are they happy with that? Do they push that?
Yeah.
Google,
we just learned this week, does have a patent on a watch. And apparently it's fairly close to market, according to some rumors. So I don't think Google necessarily...
What's going to be special about the Google Watch?
I think Google believes wearables will happen.
Mm-hmm.
Google will be apparently the Google Now cards on the watch.
Ooh.
So Google Now on a watch would be actually much more valuable than anything Apple could do, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Google Now and rich notifications, the way that they appear in your pull-down shade on your phone, I bet that those are going to be integrated into the watch seamlessly, that developers won't even have to make a change the way their apps work. This is my prediction.
Gina's so excited she's ordering right now.
Exactly. So I don't think Google necessarily wants to make a commitment in the wearable space. They just acknowledge that there is going to be a wearable space, and they want to know this is the smart thing to do. Remember, a lot of companies got bit by mobile. They understood how to do a search on the desktop. They understood Facebook Facebook on the desktop. And then mobile happened. And much faster than anybody predicted, all of the traffic went mobile. And these companies were caught with their pants down. Oh, my God, how do we make it work on mobile? So assuming that wearable might be the next thing, what do we need to do at Google? We need to know everything we can know about how people use it, about what people want, about what works for people.
And push the market.
And push the market. Nothing
which is,
wrong with
which
that.
Is the argument being made about Motorola now. They used it for the time necessary to push Samsung and company.
They did, and it worked.
And it worked.
They got what they wanted.
Yeah. They always do. I, for one, welcome my new masters in Mountain View.
The Nest acquisition has gone through now. They're officially the makers of the Nest thermostat and the Nest smoke detectors. So they are in the hardware business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a consumer product.
Yeah. But this is kind of new to Google. I guess Nexus was a consumer product. These are consumer products. These Nexus tablets, the Nexus phones.
Do you think Matt Cutts was saying last week that he would hope that Nexus doesn't go away?
Right.
What do you think? Mm-hmm. What's your prediction about this?
Well, I guess this is the same conversation, which is: does Google want to be a product manufacturer, which has its downsides?
Yeah.
Or does Google just want to understand these products to better do what they do best? Which is more important? This is my question for Matt, and my question, and I've said this before, which is more important to Google, Android or Nexus? And they're not going to, and Matt said, well, they need Nexus because that's how they try stuff out. That's how they show other handset manufacturers the best, what the best in class can be. And that may be a good argument for doing it, but I don't think it's a business for them. Even as it is, it's not a business for them.
Yeah. Right. It's a reference device. It's not a business. And it has a strong, you know, following of power users and developers, you know, the advocates. We all love the Nexus line. Regular consumers aren't going to the Play Store and buying right. Nexus, but, you know.
I think that's the point is that we're in a bubble.
Oh, yeah.
And so we think that Glass and Nexus is the thing, right? But real people, they want to say, oh, look at that guy with a glass. Look, can I try it? Yeah. But they're not going out and spending $1,500 on it. Your students wouldn't spend money on it.
No,
right?
They just want to borrow it.
Yeah.
Well, but you know, Samsung. How well has the Samsung watch sold? Is it the same thing?
We don't know, but I doubt very well. Very well.
Terribly, right?
Right.
I mean,
you know, the one.
It's early days, though. Yeah. I mean, this is a market that's going to grow. So I don't think we can write it off yet.
Right.
And it was so limited. It had to work with a Samsung device. Yes. Look, if Google comes out with a watch that works with every single app you can get in the Play Store as it is with any device running Android. I mean, just the compatibility wise, you know, it's the market is so much broader there, and they can do that.
Well, and that's interesting because that's the argument we were having yesterday or day before on MacBreak Weekly. No, yesterday was if Apple does a watch, Apple's not going to make an open device. You will have to have an iPhone. You will have to live in the Apple ecosystem. That's how Apple works. That is not a very compelling device to people like us. Who wants something open? Pebble, yeah. I can use with my Apple, but I can also use my Android, right? Yeah.
Right.
It's got to be open, I think.
And I agree.
And you have to have partnerships with everybody possible, all the, you know, run keepers of the world.
Well, and you've got to be forward compatible with all kinds of new phones and new Android operating systems and all kinds of other pains in the butt.
So do we think Google considers these business or more a way of learning about its customers, learning what services to provide?
You're right. It's a way of learning. The question is, do they want to keep learning for a while?
Yeah, they may. I'm not saying – I probably should amend my thought. I did think they'd stop making Nexus and just use Google Play Editions. But you know what? They probably will continue to do Nexus because Matt Cutts is no fool. But it won't be a business. It'll just be experiments.
Does it need to be either or? I mean, can't they be doing both?
Oh, of course they could be doing both. I guess what I'm saying is they aren't making money, enough money to make it an interesting business for them. It's not a billion-dollar business.
No.
Microsoft needs billion-dollar businesses. What does Google need? In other words, Microsoft doesn't enter a business unless they think it's a billion-dollar business. Does Google have a metric like that?
No, Google says we want to fail early and try stuff. Right? And so the question is, it's not whether they go into the business. They'll go into robotics and cars. The question is, do they stay in the business? Do they make it a business?
Well, that's different. Cars is a good example because when Google started doing cars, it was like, woohoo!
Yeah.
Sergey's woohoo! And in fact, now they own that space. And anybody, Ford or General Motors, anybody wants to do autonomous vehicles, first place they're going to go is to Mountain View and say, hey, explain, how does this work? Right? So maybe that was a smart move from a product point of view.
Yeah, puts them at the lead strategically.
How about this? Google has released a Chrome teleconferencing system.
Watch out, Cisco.
I don't know. Again, this is like, well, what is Google's intent here? So the idea is the Chrome box for meetings. It comes with a Logitech HD webcam, not made by Google, a Jabra speakerphone, not made by Google, a remote control with a keyboard in the back, and uses Google Plus Hangouts for video chat. And it's all on a Chromebox.
And $1,000.
$1,000 total. The works.
With I think, a first year free, but then a service fee, like a $200 a year service fee, too.
$250 a year Google Cloud Services.
Yeah.
Which I don't think you'd have to have, but I guess having that central.
So people saw this last week and said, oh, Leo, why aren't you using that for Twit? But then again, what do you get out of that you don't get out of my wonderful Pixel? With its wonderful camera.
Well, that's an interesting question. If we spend $1,000, Chad, what we do now is we Skype-O-Matic, we call it, which is four stock PCs, each running in Windows 7 with Skype on them.
Right.
And when you call in, and when Gina's using it right now, she calls one of those four boxes. Each of them has their own input on a board, and we can bring it up. Why couldn't those be instead this $1,000? Well, the camera we don't care about. We'd have to have video in, right?
That's the problem.
We need to use our own special camera in.
What's interesting is in the article, they show two different manufacturers. They show HP,
there's an HP and then there's an Asus. Huh.
So it, and these little boxes look a lot like the Intel
NUCs.
The next unit of computing or whatever. So it may be that there is one of these, you know, NUC style things that would fit our needs.
Right.
But this $250 a year thing, it doesn't seem like this is a separate like basically what we would want at Twit is a separate layer of internet, you know, or
we
some,
want a server.
Service.
We want to be the Google server
exactly
in our basement. In fact, we're looking at doing it with a Microsoft technology called Link.
Right.
That has a server in our basement. Sorry, dude. I don't think it'll work on your Pixel.
Yeah. Yeah. But it looks, I mean, from the article, and I could easily be wrong, it doesn't seem like the they bill it as the $250 Google Cloud service to make setup as painless as possible. That doesn't seem like we actually get an actual server that we could go in there and change config files. And
yeah, what's the difference between just going out and buying a Chromebox?
Right. That's what I'm thinking.
Which is $199, by the way.
Yeah, that, I'm not understanding what makes this different.
It may be that the
remote control, does the camera move?
No.
What I bet is you can give your client a link,
that's
and
right.
then they will call the setup that like...
Well, that's what the services are.
That's what the service is that $250 is call Google. They'll set it up for you. This is something that Amazon does.
But look at Uber Conference, which is just software. It's a website that provides a centralized WebRTC hub. Now, that's only for audio. That's not for video, so...
Right, but I've seen this before. Who is it? I believe that it's Adobe does a Adobe Connect.
Yep.
And you can call them on the phone and get technical help if you're not connecting. And that's what I think that the $250 service is if your CEO needs to call a technical line, they have some place to do that.
To be honest, that's what the $1,000 is also, because it's just a kit. And companies feel better like, we bought the kit.
Right. And it looks like there's some enterprisey features here. The service syncs with Google Calendar, and in the future, Microsoft Exchange to display the schedule of upcoming meetings.
Oh, that's nice.
You can start a new meeting by typing a meeting name to the terminal, and it like tells you when the next meeting is scheduled to begin. So it warns you if someone's muted and they start speaking, they get a warning. So it sounds like it's got a couple of like little bells and whistles that you'd want in a corporate teleconferencing environment that vanilla Hangouts doesn't
interesting
have.
Interesting product. Again, I think that this is for Google, not a product per se, in the sense that they think this is a line of business as much as an experiment,
right?
In which we learn stuff. Their business is data.
They want people using Hangouts,
right?
And if it means getting it into conference rooms for super cheap, right? I mean, this is cheap compared to most.
Right. So, what does Cisco say to this? You're sitting there, and
Cisco's
by the way
is like $20,000.
Yeah. So, what's the difference between this and what Cisco offers you?
I think Cisco probably has a lock on enterprise because they're Cisco, and because you have the Cisco guy comes and sets it up.
But some geek in the company at some point says, "Well,
it's too geeky." It's a geeky solution.
Okay.
You don't want geeks to run your business, because then they'll
save you too much money.
They save you money. They're strange.
Yeah.
They don't dress properly. They wear brown shoes.
So your sponsor Citrix probably says, "Ha, this makes us look nice and cheap and wonderful."
It's actually tough for Citrix, of course. Well.
I would think it's competitively good for them in the sense that they say, if you're already using...
introduces the idea.
If you're already using Citrix, then why
would... Because Citrix does it all software, right? It's
right,
all software
exactly,
solution, and it is much less expensive than
right.
Cisco. So, but GoToMeeting, which is their conferencing product, is considerably cheaper than Cisco. So that's always been their problem. And it's one of their... I think it's their best-selling product. I think that... I don't know. I don't think businesses are as price-sensitive as you might think.
Yeah.
I don't think that they go, whoa, here's a $1,000 box built on three different manufacturers' boxes. They don't want that. They say, I want to call Cisco and say, put it in.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's just easier for them. Now, let me ask Sarah this. How important is market capitalization as a way to judge a company? It seems like a number that the press might like.
I think it's very important.
Is it?
It is to me.
Okay, well, I'll tell you why. Google is now... the number two most valuable U.S. company, right after Exxon. Apple briefly passed Exxon, but now is back down. Google, number two. Its market capitalization is $395.42 billion. So that's important. Actually, you know, what it's a reflection of is the increased Google stock price, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's lots of ways to value a company. You can look at the size or rank them. You can look at revenues. You can look at profits. You can look at the stock price. You can look at ratios. But I like market cap because it's actually what the market values you at.
So you think that's valuable? I always feel like the stock market is just kind of like a game. A game.
And it is to some degree, but I think at the end of the day, you know, of all the different measures, so are revenues. I mean, look at the manipulation that goes on with earnings. True. You know, I mean, if you decide you want to pick some measure, I would argue that market cap's the best.
James Surowiecki in The Wisdom of Crowds says that because it's the crowd, it is more reliable. He even pointed out something I thought that was weird, that right before the Challenger disaster, the company that made the O-rings tumbled in the stock market. Or no, right after it. Before we figured out why the Challenger blew up, somehow the stock market, the wisdom of the crowds, knew that it was the O-rings, and that company tumbled in the stock market. And, I mean, that could just be weird, or it could be that maybe there is some kind of collective wisdom that the stock market shows. But it's over the long term, not over the short term, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the day-to-day fluctuations of market cap are meaningless.
Right.
But I think to say that Google is the number, you know, second most valued company in this world that we live in is reasonable.
Actually, that's a good way to put it. Not the second most valuable company, the second most valued by the market.
Right. Now, what about the cash hoards at Google and
it's
and,
number two
and Twitter
now.
Are already yeah. And Apple are already included in that price.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an investor, one of the things you're looking at is how much cash are they sitting on,
and how have they deployed it
previously? Mm-hmm. How good are they at it?
If you're Carl Icahn, how do I get that? Actually, he's given up because as Apple did a big buyback, $12 billion buyback, and Icahn said, ISS said,
never mind.
They need this cash. Don't deplete their cash reserve. So Icahn said, well, all right, I'll take that.
Yeah.
They're going towards $19 billion buyback. Actually, somebody said the other day, if Apple continues at the rate that they're going, they'll go private in by 2020. I don't know if that's going to happen. Google strikes a big ad measurement deal with ComScore. ComScore traditionally has been the kind of platinum ratings company, right, in the web.
Yeah, and there are smart people there. And Abrahams, who's now chairman, just gave up the CEO title. The issue with some of these companies, though, is that they are still based on more mass media measurements, and they're still based on sampling.
It's as if they took the Nielsen model and applied it to the web.
Because you can't, you know, measure everybody. But Google can measure most of
everybody. You can measure everybody.
So it's interesting. That's what fascinates me is that Google says there's a measurement we don't have.
Right.
And they wanted to go to ComScore to get it. Part of this is also, I guess, because advertisers buy relative BS.
Advertisers demand it. Right. That's why.
Right.
So ComScore's validated campaign essentials is the measurement technique that they use, and that's going to be part of the DoubleClick ad network, and of course Google owns DoubleClick. The combination, says USA Today, and I trust them.
all the best analysis.
You know they had a Flappy Bird icon as their masthead yesterday?
They have a sense of humor.
You got to give them credit for that.
Yeah.
The combination will let advertisers and publishers track online ads in near real time. That's something you can't do if you're getting the total number.
Right.
Samples will let you do that, right? Nope. Allowing them to change things on the fly if campaigns are not performing as expected. That's because advertisers pay a dollar amount per impression, right? Or per thousand impressions.
1,000 impressions, yes.
So they want to know, okay, I'm buying an ad, but the impressions suddenly went up or down. How's that going to affect my buy?
And what's we've been out here seeing a lot of companies, including Medium and Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and Google.
Cool.
More on that later. But one of the things that's come up again and again and again, and what Sarah and I have been talking with them, is metrics and the proper metrics. And this is part of the old, and I've gone on about this before in the show, the old mass media view of we want volume and we're going to throw ads at them just like TV. And what that yields, what that brings into the world then is Upworthies and BuzzFeeds and slideshows and all that crap. It's just volume for the sake of volume. And this is still a measurement akin to that along that line. Whereas we need to figure out how to measure at some level, some would say engagement. Ev wrote a great piece a while ago about how they measure total time read. That's one way to go. Another measurement we need is relationships. Another measurement we need is relevance. What's the value of this brand to you? Does it really give you any value? I think that the key final metric we got to figure out is outcomes? Did I get something from this that improved my life? But we're still stuck in this idea of, we'll show an ad at you, and some small percentage of the time, that will enter your brain by osmosis, and you'll end up buying this thing we want to sell you.
This reminds me a lot of the early days of tech TV. When you're a new cable channel, you're never going to get brand advertisers because you're unproven. So you get direct marketing. You get stuff that's measurable. And that's the state that the web is currently in. In fact, podcasts are too, frankly. Most of our advertisers do a direct response of some form because an advertiser can say, well, I got 50 leads from that ad, so it's worth it. The return on investment is a clear calculation. The problem is Ford, Coke, Pepsi, Procter & Gamble, it's hard for them to say, well, we sold 58 million more liters of Coke today because of the Google ad. They don't know.
But hold on, since Lisa happens to be over here in charge of the business.
She runs this.
So you had Ford for a good amount of time. They had a branding mission, which was to make them a tech-savvy company. That worked for them, right? They weren't going for volume. True?
But the way they validated that with a lot of research. So then they go in and they talk to the audience and say, what was the recall? By the way, they have since left.
Because they told us. Mission accomplished.
Exactly. Experiment's over. It worked. We got people understand that Ford Sync is high tech.
Well, I wouldn't say it wasn't an experiment. It was better than that. It wasn't an experiment. You helped them change the perception of the brand.
And they knew it worked. Yeah. That's why they were with us 2 years. Almost 3 years. Spent several million dollars with us. So it wasn't although for Ford, that's less than a Super Bowl ad. But it was for us a fairly significant investment. According to this article, traditional brand advertising is worth $300 billion a year. And Google wants a chunk of that, right? Digital brand spending is only $18 billion in 2013. And so they'd like more of that $300 billion to move over to the digital side. So would we.
Yeah.
And frankly, the reason I kind of understand this is because it's the same issue for us, is how do you get a metric to an advertiser that they understand and will buy? I agree with you. Really, the real metric that they care about is harder to measure, like engagement and things like that. Yeah. But it ultimately comes down to results. They can measure results. Most of them can measure results. The direct ones can, but Google wants more brand advertising. The end game is to, according to ComScore's president, is to integrate this with TV measurement. Most of the ad dollars are on TV, and over time that will shift to digital, and you want to measure this in real time across all platforms. It's interesting. But probably a little too inside baseball, so I'm going to take a break. Changelog is coming up next. Gina Trapani, Changelog hat on.
Will do.
Get your scarf.
What do you call it with the lips? The umbrature? No, the
umbrature?
No, do a trumpet. What's that called? Chat room. What's umbrature. That called? What?
Umbrature.
Umbrature, is that what it is? Get your umbratures ready, people.
Well, no, that's your... That's coming.
Yeah, because it's trumpets. Sorry.
Harsh. You know, really, I'm sorry, but when I hear a tuba, I just see a guy going into a big tube.
But at least that catches the spit.
This Week in Google, brought to you by 99designs.com. When I see an app that's poorly designed, I see a programmer who was a good programmer, perhaps, but didn't understand that he wasn't also a designer. I saw something on Secret this morning that said somebody who thinks he's a program designer is good at neither. You could be a great chef. You could have a great business. But frankly, you need a great designer to show it off for that landing page, that email template, the billboard, the T-shirt, the app. And the best place to go is that place where 270,000, actually, what is that now, 290? 280,458 designers have gathered waiting to help you look better. I'm talking 99 Designs. If you're worried about budgets, don't worry. 99 Designs, very affordable. We just did a 99 Designs contest. That's what they call them, where you go there and you say, I want a Twit hoodie design. We've got how many? I can't remember. 20 or 30 designs. We got 60? We got a ton of them. It was fun going through them. Great, cool stuff. We bought more than normally you'd say, okay, and you'd work with a designer and say, okay, I'm going to use this one. We liked so many of them, we bought 5 of them because we thought, we'll use these later. These are great. 99 Designs is a great way to find great designs, logos, car wraps. There it is. There's one of them. I really like that one. I don't think that, well, we're having a vote right now, but I don't think that's going to be the hoodie. But I think we'll do a t-shirt sometime with that. Isn't
I like
gorgeous?
That one a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. You can go to inside.twit.tv and
what
vote.
What did win?
We don't. It's not done yet. We think that one's going to win. That one's leading.
Bold.
Isn't that great?
It's bold.
Well, for a hoodie, it needs to be bold. Like, it needs to make a statement, right?
Yes.
These are all from 99 Designs.
Is there a swag store here?
There should be.
We do. You know what we do? We used to have a swag store, and we realized, I'll tell you in a second. We figured something out that I think really was true. Project started at just $199, and happiness is always 100% guaranteed. I want you to boost your brand's visibility. Get something great, something that looks good. If you're doing an app, please don't do it without help from somebody who really knows design. Go to 99designs.com/twig, 99designs.com/twig, and get a $99 power pack of services absolutely free. The power pack gives you more designer time and attention. They'll bold, highlight, and feature your design project in the 99 Designs marketplace. That way you get literally about twice as many designs. 99designs.com/twig. Get that $99 value. We love 99 Designs. What we discovered was if you just have a store, stuff sells very slowly. But if you say, we're going to sell this for 30 days, and after that it's gone forever, it works much better.
Is it a significant revenue stream?
No.
No.
It's like Google Glass.
It's more about relationship with the audience. Well, we went to the new Facebook headquarters. Last I saw them, they were in the one building in Palo Alto. And we drive up.
That wasn't so long ago either,
by the way.
Wasn't at
all.
Yeah.
So we drive up, and I'm thinking, we're both thinking, Sarah's been making fun of California. But
you're supposed to tell people that.
You know, there's 18 inches of snow coming down.
I'm staying here.
You should stay here.
So the building looks really dull. It's the old Sun headquarters, I think, right?
Oh,
really dull on the outside.
Yeah.
You get inside, though, and this is great courtyard. That's like Disneyland.
That's where their hacker days
exactly.
Are.
So they have a swag store now. Makes me very happy to go in and buy hoodies.
I cannot tell you how many. A lot of people, we're part of the, you know, the geek trail or whatever it is. They go to the Hewlett Packard Garage. They go to the Apple. But when they go to Apple, they go to the company store. When they go to Google, they go to the company store. That's a big.
That's why I want to know, where is your company store?
We don't have one.
But you can't get in either unless there's an employee with you.
You know why we don't have one?
Why?
Tax. I think, right? We don't want to have to collect sales tax. And just a pain in the butt.
Oh, just dealing with
it's just too complicated.
Setting up a cash.
Merchandise.
You can just give it to us. That's fine.
We do, actually. We frequently do.
Yeah. If I'm nice.
I'll give you a hat.
Okay. And a shirt.
And a shirt.
Okay,
anything
now we're talking.
You want.
Now we're talking.
We frequently, I don't want to say this out loud, because we often have live studio audiences, and we frequently give them small parting gifts.
Uh-oh. They're coming
stickers,
up soon.
Pens, keychains, t-shirts.
Leeching off you.
So we don't want to sell stuff because it's too complicated.
Cheesy. Yeah.
And besides, who needs to make money?
I think we need a special changelog trumpet to sell.
Let's get... You got your embouchures ready? All right, everybody. Together now.
The Google changelog.
And here she is, Gina Trapani, with the latest from Google.
Google Now just keeps getting better. A couple of new updates this week. You can now choose specific TV and video on-demand providers for viewing recommendations that Google Now gives you. You'll see Airbnb reservations that you may have made that are in your inbox. You've got simpler alarm controls. And now you've got information about getting to an appointment on time. So if I've gotten my calendar, go do Twig at 1 o'clock in Petaluma, and Google Now will actually show that appointment, which it does now. But now it'll say, hey, if you're driving, you better leave by noon before the car, which is pretty cool.
If it's over a bridge, you better take your medication.
Yeah, if it's over, right, for Jeff, the Google Now needs to say, bring your anxiety.
This is cool. I thank you for telling me this. So I'm doing this right now, my Google Now, and it says, here's it already knew my zip code. Here's the TV providers. Which one do you use?
Where is that?
It's in the Google. Oh, so you press the magic wand.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of good settings in the magic wand.
Yeah. Whoops.
I gotta say, Google Now has become the first thing that I look at in the morning now.
Wow.
Particularly here because of the, you know, just like the weather and I want to know what the temperature is and whatever. But it's getting really good at just showing me news stories that I'm interested in and showing me stuff that I didn't realize that I wanted. Really love Google Now. So always getting better.
And then you can choose your on-demand providers. So I can check Amazon Prime, HBO Go, Hulu
I didn't get
Plus,
that.
Netflix.
I just got, it just said okay.
That's really
right,
cool.
and then it'll recommend times and you know.
I love that. You better leave work now if you want to see Game of Thrones. I like that.
Bye, show's over.
That's a good one.
That is a good one.
Yeah.
Let's see what else we got. Oh, we've got a Google search experiment is now showing restaurant menus inside search results.
Yay!
So it's an experiment that hasn't gone out to everyone because I tried it here. I tried a couple of local joints and then I tried a couple of really famous joints. I tried Peter Luger and Junior's Cheesecake and I just couldn't see this. Now, it turns out Google said that this is just an experiment and it's just going out to a few users, you know, a certain segment of users are seeing it. And it looks like an extension of the knowledge graph. So it looks like they're pulling menu information from allmenus.com and we'll show it in line in the search result. Again, I didn't see this. I don't know if you guys see this. I don't know if you want to try something near Petaluma.
Do a search, Chad, just to see if you're getting it now. So you'd search for a restaurant, search for the social club, our neighbor. It'd have to be somebody who has submitted their menus to All Menus, I guess.
Right.
Nothing. What's the big restaurant? What would be the most...
I mean, you can also just search restaurants, and it'll give you all these. So
yeah, but
just...
we've already seen that. What we want to see is also a menu, right?
Right.
But click the restaurant.
Graffiti doesn't have anything.
Okay, so you got reviews in line there, and it just says menu at All Menu. Yeah, this experiment actually inlines the menu in
search.
That's
neat.
That's great.
Which is
an example of what you were saying, Leo, about data, right? Google has the data to know that what we always click on is the damn menu.
Right.
So we'll give you the damn menu.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Another change to search is that Google is showing with great prominence the first playable music video for your search term in the official channel. So if you search for Daft Punk, Get Lucky, the top result is a giant, what looks to be playable video. It actually isn't a playable video. It's just a giant image. You click on it and it takes you to YouTube to play the video.
Is it always YouTube or can it be other sources?
It can be
Vivo's the company. It can be other sources, but it shows up differently. So for something that's on Daily Motion, it will not have the full screen image. It'll just be a card.
And it appears that these are usually the official videos, like the Vivo video and not like user uploaded videos.
Well, that's what you want. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Right. Exactly. And finally, a little YouTube update. You can basically play most embedded YouTube videos on your Chromecast now. Google quietly rolled out support for setting most web clips to the Chromecast media stick. You just need to choose this little button bottom right. Yeah, you just click on that, and if there's a Chromecast on your Wi-Fi network, you'll be able to choose the target and go for it.
On your gigantic curved screen.
Yep.
Yes. The only clips that won't work are live streams, private footage, and desktop-only videos, which I guess is a YouTube video setting.
You know, it's so funny because I was playing a YouTube video last night, and normally that lower right-hand corner is full screen.
Right. And
I hit it, and it showed my Chromecast. I said, what the...
Yep. It's interesting. That's an interesting choice of placement for that button because I hit that full screen button a lot.
Yeah.
Right. So now I'm going to see the Chromecast button. Actually, you know, funny, not on the changelog, but sort of related. I was digging through my display settings yesterday on Android. And if you go into Android settings and you go into display, there is a setting that says cast screen. Which I got me really excited. I was like, oh, did I miss this? Can you send your Android screen to the Chromecast? You can't yet, but it looks like that's going to get rolled out. I guess there's support for Miracast, which is a Wi-Fi kind of, yeah. So they changed it from wireless display to cast screen. So it seems imminent that you're going to be able to cast your entire Android screen, whatever you're doing, to your TV soon.
Mine just says no nearby devices found.
Do we have a Chromecast on our network?
I don't believe we do.
Can I take your phone home with me? All right, thank you.
it just doesn't work. I try. I've got a Chromecast here.
Only if you take my Pixel too.
No,
they
I
go
have
together
a
like they're
I
like.
Want, I don't want this your Pixel. New.
This apparently rolled out at the end of 2013, and it doesn't do anything right now. But I got really excited, and then it didn't work. But it looks like that's something that's going to be happening soon. So it's really cool to see the Chromecast kind of opening up, and just cast all the things. I say
mm-hmm. cast screen. It's on my Nexus 7 as well.
Yeah. That's all I got.
I love it, Gina. So last night I had nothing to do and for entertainment. I went into my Android settings.
That's Gina.
That's Gina.
You know, what I was doing actually is I was taking the subway home from work and catching up on the All About Android episode that I had missed the week before because I had a work thing. I'd missed the show. So I was trying to figure out how to lock my screen orientation. So it was actually a Twit-related discovery. So there you go. I was watching a Twitch show on my phone and I found the task screen.
That's my new phrase I'm going to use all the time. It was a Twit-related discovery.
A lot of my tech discoveries are Twit-related discoveries.
Well, that's funny because you, Gina Trapani, are a Twit-related discovery.
Well, thank you.
And that is your Google changelog. Couple of sad notes. Of course, you probably all know that Shirley Temple passed away at the age of 85 yesterday, and that caused me to binge watch
Lollipop in the Sky.
Yeah, 15 Shirley Temple movies last night.
Did you really?
No.
No, okay.
did you have a Shirley Temple in her honor?
Ah, the drink.
The drink?
The drink.
Yes, cherry juice and ginger ale. Love that. Little extra maraschino on the side.
I also saw some video of her as a diplomat, and she walked like she did when she was in the movies.
Vladimir Putin, you're a bad man. That's my Shirley Temple. The other sad note, Sid Caesar passed away today. The great television comedian. His show of shows really broke so much ground in TV comedy. And one of the funniest men alive. Just loved him. Not only that, but the writer's room for your show of shows gave us Woody Allen, Mel Brooks.
Yes. I shouldn't do this because in the moment of obituary, one should do nothing but respect. But.
Come on, Sid Caesar. This is a guy who had so much fun doing television.
Well, word has it he wasn't a very nice guy, but that's fine. He's a showbiz. But you know what? You know what? It wasn't the golden age of TV. Show of Shows is always pointed out as being the golden age of TV.
It was hysterical.
No, it wasn't. Let's watch some right now.
Oh, Jarvis, TV critic coming.
Yeah.
Now I know.
Future news, a TV news journalist.
You know what? There was a movie called, I think it was 12 from your Show of Shows. They actually put them together in a movie. It was one of the funniest movies they ever saw. I beg to differ. The From Here to Eternity, where they throw a bucket of water in Imogene Coca's face. That's comedy gold, my friend. Comedy gold. All right. We can agree to disagree on that.
All right.
And remember my favorite year, which was the kind of fictionalized story of being in a writer's room of a show similar to mine.
Yes, which is
one of the great movies of all time.
Right. And what that made about Jon Stewart and the Daily Show.
We're in a new golden age.
Yes, we are.
You know, I interviewed somebody last night on Triangulation, which was a guy named Brett Martin, who is a feature writer for GQ, Vanity Fair, and The New Yorker. Really great guy. He wrote a book called Difficult Men, which was about what he calls the third golden age of TV, which began with The Sopranos. Mm-hmm. But the thing that changed it was you could suddenly make television that didn't care about ratings. Because of subscription TV, you could actually say, we don't care if The Sopranos generates ratings. We care if it generates subscriptions.
Well, here's another way to put that. I think that's true, but I also think it goes back to our earlier discussion about metrics. That's a way to get a feedback loop about quality.
That's right.
Right? Ratings don't give you a feedback loop about quality any more than page views do. So you need, and we're talking about this with Ev Williams today, you want a feedback loop to lead to quality. You want that to be the outcome. And some would say that's just, Jarvis, that proves paywalls are good for the world. Okay. But
it's one kind of signal. It's not the only kind of signal.
Exactly.
We get a feedback loop. I mean, the number of people in the chat, the number of people who download our shows, the engagement of our audience,
the
amount of email we get.
What's the proportion of, I've asked this before, but I always forget, people who watch live.
Oh, it's
people
less than 10%.
10%, okay. People who watch video then or versus listen.
That varies by show. Some shows are more, this is a Talking Heads show, so it's still more audio. But iPad Today, which is our show about the iPad, is more video. So that really does vary on the content.
Okay.
What surprises me is how many people do watch video of Talking Heads programs like this. Because
we're just so pretty.
The video adds nothing to the content.
I've had friends, and my brother is an avid Twig watcher, and he said that he will mount his phone to his dashboard and bring up the video. He said, I do not want to watch, I want to only watch the show. And I was like, please, while you're driving through Manhattan, please don't get into an accident while you're watching our show. But he said, no, I want to see your faces. I want to see what you're talking about. It's way better with video. So I get that a lot.
I didn't want to do video. Audio is so cheap compared to video. Mm-hmm. It's so much easier. But I also realized that audio doesn't get the attention. In fact, there was just a great article on Dig. Dig is now doing original content about why audio does not go viral, but video does go viral, right?
And it's an incredible piece.
Wasn't that good?
And it, yeah, but what was the gist of it? I didn't see it.
The truth is there has been viral video. You know, Orson Welles.
Viral audio.
Viral audio. Orson Welles berating the advertising agency.
A gonk? What, sir, is a gonk?
That's viral.
Can you define a gonk?
But there are very few viral audios compared to viral videos. I don't know if he said why. I have an opinion why. I think to go viral, something has to engage. And actually, I got this from Tim Street. It has to engage your emotions. The more emotions that anything engages, the more viral it will be. So if it makes you laugh and makes you cry, that's better than just laughing. And I think video is better at engaging the emotions. Audio tends to be more abstract and intellectual.
Well, this is another TWiT discovery because I think that the presumption is, and we have this in our journalism school, the presumption is that audio and video are different worlds, right? For that matter, broadcast video and web video are different worlds. Right. We'll leave that aside. That audio and video are different things, entirely different skills, and so on and so forth. And so talking about this show, the fact that a good proportion of people listen to it rather than watch it, you miss some jokes. You don't see my pink face when I'm on my camera. You don't see other things. But the jokes become apparent.
Right.
They become known. So one of my students has a new business idea, and he presumed audio. So I then show him TWiT and say, you know, I'm not so sure, folks. Maybe you want to do video presuming the option of audio. And he loved that. And it was inspired by you.
That's kind of what we've done.
Yeah.
And at a great expense, by the way. For instance, this studio, we don't need it for audio.
No, God, no.
And it's $1.5 million extra.
Actually, folks, it's just a giant chroma key. It's a giant green screen. There's nothing
we're
really
in a closet.
Here.
Right.
We're actually in Gina's basement.
Yes.
I wish we were. That looks like such a cozy, fun place.
You can help her shovel.
It is. Yeah. I mean, isn't it that audio is just, video is inherently more shareable? I mean, when you're listening to audio, you're out and about and doing things. When you're watching video, you're doing it on your computer. Right. And it's also short video goes viral. Right. I mean, Leo, I've seen, you know, your shows do great. Right. But I've seen people take clips or do, you know, jump cuts of
nothing,
certain moments in your shows. And those go viral because they're short and people just have, you know, short attention spans and they're seeing them on Facebook or wherever. But audio just isn't quite as inherently shareable. And usually people are downloading it and listening to it while they're washing the dishes or walking the dog. And there isn't a share button anywhere for them to press.
It is a challenge for us because video is not all that shareable either, and we don't really go viral.
I think the other thing that people don't use enough, especially for your shows because they're so long, is share at start moment X.
Right, and you can do that.
And you can do it, and I'm surprised there's not a lot more.
Very discoverable.
You get to see the rant or you get to see the funny moment, and then you might watch the rest. It's the same thing I've wanted to see with articles, where Repost.us, which I've talked on the show before, you can post an entire article. The next level I'd like to see of that is that David Carr wrote a wonderful piece on Medium about the death of Philip Seymour Hoffman, and he had one paragraph in there about addiction that was just brilliant. So what I wanted to do was to share
that paragraph.
Right, so what I did instead was, of course, I cut and pasted it onto Google+.
Right.
I wanted to embed the article with that paragraph.
Yeah.
Highlight it, right? And then people would probably stay and read the rest. Same for your show, I think. Somebody can go in to consider how long our shows are in, you know, hour 4, minute 22, and say, well, that's a really funny moment when Gina really socked it to Jeff. And then people would watch both ways.
Right.
So what you want the audience to do, hello, chat room, this is your job now, is you want to basically annotate the shows to the good bits. And you want, I think, a schedule of good bits in the show.
Right.
And then share those.
I mean, viral is, as a couple of people in the chat are pointing out, isn't the goal.
No.
Because viral is very short term.
It's discovery. What viral gives you is discovery.
Discovery is the goal.
Yes.
And so I would love sharing. I don't care if we get 1 million views of anything or even 100,000. But what I want is people to discover what we're doing and say, wow, that Jeff guy is great. I want to see more of him.
Yes.
And then watch the show. So I agree with you. We'd like, but mechanically, it's very difficult right now.
And this is one of the great metrics for Repost.us, which I don't know if I mentioned on the show before.
No,
Sarah's heard it 10 times already this week. is that they find that the click-through rate from an entire embedded post or article, which you think would be zero because somebody's read the whole article, is actually high. It's 5 to 7%.
Wow.
Highly qualified clicks because somebody says, oh, I like that. I want to read more.
I want to reread it.
I want to read more.
I want to read more.
I like that article. Are there more like you at home? And so you go that way.
I think that's true. I'll click through. Even if I've read the gist of an article, I'll click through if I want to see more.
Yeah.
Or I'm interested in belly fat ads because I don't get enough of those.
Yes. Whereas now, what's really happening is we have the cynical act. I'm spamming them again, but Upworthy and Chartbeat, where you just are sharing the headline.
Buzzfeed.
Chartbeat's different than Buzzfeed.
Right, because Chartbeat, however...
We know what he meant.
Chartbeat has some great stats, which I think I mentioned on the show before, where people share before they read. So what they're really sharing is just the headline.
Yeah.
They're not sharing the article.
Yeah. I mentioned that on Twitter this weekend. I thought that was a very interesting piece of information. We also saw this week that Upworthy has taken a great dive in the number of hits, almost 50%, because of a change in algorithm at Facebook. That's all it took. To downgrade Upworthy, which is apparently not so worthy.
Live by the sword?
Yeah.
Live by the sword.
That's right. Yeah. The Upworthy CEO's response was, well, we're just going back to normal. We had a very unusually big December, that's all you were seeing there. We're going to take a break, come back with more. I want to hear about your travels, you and Sarah's travels around the Bay Area to meet with CEOs like Ev Williams of Media and Twitter. Sarah Barton is here. She's the dean of the School of Journalism at the City University of New York. So nice to have you. Bartlett. Not
like
relation to President Bartlett. No. That's what I always think. President Bartlett.
I like that.
Yeah.
Although Dean sounds good, too.
Dean's good, too. Dean's a good title. I always am scared because I always got brought up in front of the dean. So I don't. You're not that kind of disciplinary dean.
I want you to feel
dean.
That fear.
You do.
Yeah. She's good at that, actually. Yes.
The dean would like to see you now, Laporte.
Oh, God. Again.
Although the dean's list is a good thing. I was on that other list.
The bad list.
Jeff Jarvis is here from the City University of New York and the author of Public Parts.
Indeed.
And a welcome weekly contributor on the show. So nice to have you in studio.
I love being here.
Gina Trapani, stuck in Manhattan. Good to have
Brooklyn,
you, too.
Right?
Well, Brooklyn. You're in Brooklyn today. Yeah. Okay, that's right.
It's important.
How's that
does not look like Manhattan, Leo. Let me give you that. They have no paneling is illegal in Manhattan.
Yeah,
it's not allowed.
And the tchotchkes, too.
You can't, no tchotchkes? Not allowed in Manhattan. No Jets blankets? Not allowed in Manhattan. Only Queens and Brooklyn.
You got to be in the
suburbs.
None
of that stuff is allowed.
Maybe the Bronx.
Bronx, okay. Queens, okay.
Queens is all right.
Not Manhattan. No paneling.
That's funny. See, I'm learning about the culture.
That was when Bloomberg got rid of the big sodas that took all the attention. He also outlawed paneling.
Yeah, and tchotchkes. Yeah. No Hummel figurines on the Isle of Manhattan. How is Think Up going?
Think Up is going great. We demoed it last week at New York Tech Meetup, which is
how'd that go?
It went really, really well. I was worried. I heard it was a really tough crowd.
It is.
And they were really good to us. The demo went well.
The video's really up?
The video, yeah. I'm not sure if they chopped it up into individual demos, but the video of the entire meetup is up. And we were up against like a sex tech section that was like smart vibrators. And
I was there.
You were there.
I was there. I didn't realize that was you.
Yeah, that was me.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
Yeah, it was really fun.
What do you mean up against smart vibrators? What do you mean? What is that?
It's a really complicated concept.
Is it a competition?
Well, the tech meetup is a series of demos from various tech companies in New York. And there happened to be, and it was actually the first ever, it was a sex tech section at the end of the night where they
it was in honor of Valentine's Day, coming up.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, sort of the February event.
Yeah. Yeah, so basically you go up and you demo in groups of two or three, and we actually, the other company that we demoed with was Lendo, which is a micro payment loans company, and they actually got a ton of questions as well. But it's a huge event. It was really intimidating, but it went really well, so I was happy with it. So thank you. Yeah, think up.
Wait, still got to hear more about the sex tech, Gina.
You got
male geeks out here. You're not satisfying their needs.
Yeah.
Let's hear one stupid sec tech item.
I am so biting my lip right now.
There was a demo of a smart vibrator, and I forget what the name of it was. Maybe Sarah, you remember. And
I'm going to tell you that I don't remember.
It's a
chat room. What would you name a smart vibrator?
Telestosterone, says the chat room.
Let's just say it's remote-controlled wearable tech, and that's all I'll say.
It was designed by someone who was living in Boston, I think, and his wife was back in Singapore.
Oh, you mean
like
over
that.
The internet?
And so yes. She can help to... he can help her achieve an orgasm with the...
With the app.
With the remote vibrator.
The internet.
It was a riveting demonstration.
It was...
There's no meaning to the word latency, I gotta tell you that.
I have to say, the demo, like, the guy who demoed came off, like, he was so earnest.
He was...
And, like, really...
It was a devoted husband trying to help his long-distance wife. What are you going to not like about that story?
Wait. Is this Vibes?
Yes. That's it. Check it out.
Whoa!
All you girls out there...
I know there's
two or three of you.
There's a video, Chad. I don't know. We dare?
So, wait a minute. Don't show that. So there's
my favorite moment of the demo was a point at which he said, "And we even talk to women about."
Oh well, it's about time.
And I thought,
connect, select,
it was a little. Play. You know, there was sort of a bit of an anticlimactic moment, if I may use that term, because they announced at the beginning, they said, "Okay, anyone with young people, you know, children under the age of, you know, X, you really need to leave the room now." Because we're going to have this special sex, you know.
Imagine listening to 50 Shades of Grey with a hands-free vibrator.
That vibrates in perfect sync with the audio fantasy.
So there's an audio fantasy?
Yes.
So you don't need the husband.
No, that's what I'm saying. You can be 3,000 miles away.
But you don't need the husband at all.
Well, he's talking over his iPhone.
No, but there's a video. There's a fantasy. Well, there's an audio fantasy.
Yeah, there's,
that's the fantasy that you don't need the husband.
Yeah, there were a few different options.
Yeah, you could...
You've been replaced by a podcast, honey.
You could choose different paths. Aren't you the one who's interested in paths?
There's more than one way to do it.
Not to in any way overshadow Think Up.
You see what she meant when she said...
Even with this, you did well. Yeah, this is great.
Competition.
Jada.
This is what I meant by being up against some tough... It was a really...
Tough
night to demo, honestly.
Well, that's important. No,
it's wearable.
It's 100% hands-free experience.
It is indeed wearable. It's wearable tech.
I think I'm just about to get fired for being in a pleasant work environment.
The dean is here. It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
The
Jesus.
Dean.
I didn't mean for this to go so
well. It was the topic of my next fault, faculty Gina. Meeting. Now you've blown it for me.
There's an app for it. That's what's, I think, kind of interesting. It has an app, Android or iOS. I'm surprised Apple approved that, to be honest. Seems like that's something Apple wouldn't approve. They don't believe in people having sex.
I think they had some problems with it, actually.
Yeah.
And then,
It was part of the discussion was like how do legitimate consumer products that are related to sex deal with, you know, things like App Store policies and even just getting, you know, payment processors and different web services.
Sure.
You know, a lot of the companies just won't work with them.
I bet they only have problems in the U.S., though. I think
she said globally. They have a problem.
Really? Yeah. Not in Germany.
I think she was saying, I mean, there was a woman who, I forget her name, who came up afterwards and was quite passionately, you know, annoyed about how the financial world was sort of shutting
down.
We're
anti-sex. Yeah.
Correct.
Cindy Gallup.
So that's right.
A lot of negativity about sex.
Especially by bankers.
So it's all the more impressive that you did so well, Gina.
Yeah.
That's a tough act to be on stage.
Let me ask you, how's Think Up doing?
Think has gone really well, Leo. Thank you. We demoed last week. It went awesome. We're going to open up sign-ups to the public in the next couple of weeks. It's going really well. Thank you for asking.
Thank you.
And damn you, Jarvis. You couldn't let it slide, could you?
Well,
no.
Not only does it slide... Well, no, that's right. This episode... We'll be back with more in just a bit. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by the financial markets. Personal Capital. Actually, Personal Capital was started by... I want to say Ed Harris, but he's an actor.
That's right.
The other Harris, who was former CEO of Intuit and PayPal, learned a lot about people and how they use money. Talk about collecting data. And after he left Intuit, he started a Personal Capital. We had him on our show, Bill Harris, that's it, on Triangulation about a year ago. He told me about Personal Capital. They were just starting up, and I said, this is great. I signed up for it immediately. The idea is your financial life as you get older, as life goes on, gets more and more complicated. More loans, more stocks, more bank accounts, more charge cards. And each one is on an individual site with a separate password. Very hard to keep track of it or even see it as a whole. Personal Capital collates all that information into a single page where you could see exactly how you stand, all your accounts, all your assets. On your computer, they have great apps on your phone or your tablet. It's real-time, intuitive graphs. And then, once you understand where you stand, it can you can make sense of your investments, of your of how to plan for your future, how to plan for your retirement, how to build your assets. If you're overpaying in fees, it'll show you how where you're overpaying and how you can reduce those fees. You can get tailored advice on optimizing your investments. It's a really great idea, and I want you to try it free right now. Costs you nothing. PersonalCapital.com/Twig. PersonalCapital.com/Twig. It's a smart way to grow your money, and I don't care how young you are. This is something you got to start thinking about. It's I wish I'd been, you know, kind of savvy about 401ks and investments and stuff when I was a young guy. If you start putting money away now, just a little bit, it really adds up. PersonalCapital.com/Twig. And we thank Bill Harris and the Personal Capital team for their support of this week in Google.
Little news update here. I see from Twitter, Lee Ball sent an update that there's a new Android update for the Nexus 7 to improve compatibility with Verizon's 4G LTE network.
And that goes to all Nexus. I should actually check. Does it go to all Nexus
7s? I didn't have it on mine. I guess it would. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well, interesting. Unless you have a... Yeah, that's right, because it's the same technical setup.
Mine doesn't have LTE, so even if I got it, it wouldn't be much use to me. But you've got your Nexus 7 there, so check and see.
It's not on.
It's one of the worst dances that we tech geeks do, where you go, update. Is there an update now?
Update
now? How about now? It's so frustrating. Very, very frustrating. So a very interesting news story coming out. In fact, this morning on Windows Weekly, we talked about it. That at Mobile World Congress, which is just a couple of weeks off, Nokia will show a phone based on Android. Nokia, by the way, about to be acquired by Microsoft as soon as the Chinese government approves it. This is something Peter Bright on Ars Technica said could never happen. He wrote an article that said, and I thought it was a great article, neither Nokia, Microsoft, or anyone else should fork Android. It's unforkable. His point being there's two parts to Android. There's the Android open source part. And there's the Google services part. And yes, this AOSP part of Android is free and open and can be put on any device. Amazon did it and forked. But you don't get, if you do that, you don't get any of the Google services, which means not just the Play Store and all the Google apps, but it also means things like location services. There's an Now, Gina, you probably know better than I, so jump in here. There's open source versions of, let's say, location services, but it's old and not been kept up to date and probably not very good. Is that right?
It's not as up to date as Google's proprietary layer. It works, but you know, people who have been writing this article that seem this sort of thing that's been coming out over and over that Google's not really open, that AOSP is abandonware. You know, will say that it hasn't been updated in a really long time. That Google is putting most of its development efforts into GMS. That GMS is the Google Mobile Services, which is their proprietary layer that works on top of AOSP.
Well, even to the point where the launcher now is a GMS app, right?
Right. The Nexus 5 launcher is the Google Now launcher. That is a proprietary. That is a closed source Google app. Right. So the AOSP is open source version, but then you can layer all these things on top of it. Right. And so the argument is, and I think that this is like developers who feel very passionate and religious, really, about what open source is. What does open mean? What does Google mean when they say it's open? And this is what I think Bright is coming from in this Ars Technica article, is saying, you know, Android's not really open. You can't really fork it, because the real value in Android is GMS, is Google's proprietary layer. So if Microsoft, you know, shouldn't fork Android and try to build on top of it, Nokia shouldn't fork Android and build on top of it. It's a lose-lose situation, because you either have to write your own proprietary layer to catch up to what Google's done, and Google has a tremendous head start, and not only would you have to match feature for feature, but you'd have to match all the quirks as well, because there are some bugs in the open source layer that the proprietary layer fixes. You know, you're not going to be able to do that, or you have to release a phone without any of the Google goodness, which is just a crappy experience. This is Bright arguing, or you have to cede control of your phone to Google and apply for certification and get all the Google goodies, but sort of, you know, give all the control of the platform, or give all the good stuff of the platform to Google, right? So that you can have, you know, you can have control, or you can have that, you know, the good experience, but you can't have both. That's his thesis of this article.
Peter, of course, we've had him on many times. He covers Windows. And his point really is aimed at Microsoft and this rumor that Microsoft and Nokia might be doing an Android-based phone. In fact, we believe that rumor is true. Both Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley said this is true. They will announce it soon. And what it is, it's the Asha low-end Nokia phones, the phones they sell for as little as $35 in the developing world. And it's just not possible to put Windows Phone on such a cheap device. But it is possible to do Android.
Wait. Is that a PR move to say, well, Windows isn't cheap, but Android is?
Could be, or it could. Well, I mean, it is true that you could. What they've been using is Symbian. They've been using S60. It's time to update it. I think it's not unreasonable to say Windows Phone couldn't operate on these. But you're right; it could just be pure marketing to say we're not going to put our premium operating system on a $35 right. phone. Although it is on a $100 phone, the 520. So the other side of that story is that Nokia will be providing all of the services that Google currently provides. In other words, just as there's a Google services layer, there might be a Nokia services layer, including location, a Nokia store, and all of mm-hmm. that. There's a rebuttal to Peter's article by Diane Hackborn. Do you know her? She's an Android developer, it says.
She is. I don't know her personally. She's a Googler. She's been working on Android for a very long time. She's one of the earliest Android developers. She's, you know, probably one of the, you know, biggest Android experts that, you know, exists on the planet. And she wrote a point-by-point rebuttal inside the Ars comments, which is an amazing read because it really gives you a sense of how Google's thinking about Android kind of internally. And her argument is essentially that AOSP is a fully functioning smartphone operating system that anyone can install on any device, and everything works. And there's no other operating system that is that open. And that Google's proprietary layer is proprietary because it interacts with Google's cloud services. That the cloud services that Google builds or provides, that's really where the business value is, and that's why it's proprietary, because that code lives in the cloud. It does not run on the phone. That's why Google isn't including it into the open source project. It's a great, great read. I absolutely recommend seeing kind of her perspective on it. I mean, you know, she went as far as to say, she said, you know, look, there's lots of good reasons why Microsoft or Nokia shouldn't fork Android and build on top of Android, but it's not this. Android is absolutely forkable. And, you know, she's really right. I mean, Amazon forked Android successfully.
Yeah.
It's certainly forkable.
But Amazon, a year before they did that, built the Amazon Android store, really beefed it up.
Because that's their business model. And what I think we're hearing is that this is a way to get the web on phones at a cheap price.
And I think it's pretty clear that after all the Scroogled ads, no Microsoft company would ever include Google services as a layer on their phone. So that was a non-starter. The real question is, and I think that Nokia has answered it, because I think it's pretty clear they're going to do it, that can you make a good phone based on AOSP? And I bet you they did.
I mean, the big question is, can you make a great mobile phone experience that doesn't involve rich cloud services,
right?
You know, connections.
But Microsoft has all those services, right? Mm-hmm. Microsoft has cloud services, so you tie in, instead of you tying into Google, you tie into Exchange, you tie into Microsoft Azure.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what services Google provides that Microsoft doesn't. Instead of Google Apps, you've got Office 365. I think that
right. There's one to one.
Well, I don't know if it's exactly one to one. I'd have to look down the list.
Right, and there certainly is a layer of app code that you have to write on the Android side in order to interact with the cloud services.
Right.
But, you know, a long time ago, and I forget who, I think it was one of the founders of GitHub, wrote this great post about what you should open source and what you shouldn't. And he basically said that, you open source everything except what's core to your business value. And, you know, Android, the AOSP isn't, that's just a platform for Google to offer their services to users on top of. That's not their business value. Their business value is the cloud services. It's the data, right? It's the users. It's that. That's what GMS is the bridge to on smartphones.
I think where this comes from is the sensible feeling that why would Google want to allow forks of Android. Isn't that bad for Google to allow that at all?
So that's why
the presumption
is
they're doing things to prevent it, even if they're not.
That seems to be what people are arguing, that Google is making Android unforkable. They're trying to make it as closed. You know, that it's really, it's closed, but it's wearing the open, you know, it's flying the open banner, right?
That which is the whole fight.
Developers' hearts. Yeah, but the really, truthfully, they're evil and trying to take over the world.
Right.
And this is, you know, we've kind of heard this argument about Android a whole bunch, right?
Yeah, we heard it before, Gina, right? When they weren't fast enough in opening up the various versions.
Yes.
Right? They're kneecapping open source.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Yep. Exactly. I don't think that that's true.
Yeah. That's a compelling argument.
It's just people can't believe it. I think you're right. But I think people go, no, that can't be true. Google's not allowing this. Google must be trying to
open is open is open.
Because, by the way, that's what Microsoft would do.
Yeah. I mean, the question is, does Google get some yuck yucks out of this and start advertising that Microsoft is using Android?
No, because it's not Google Android. It has no googliness to it. It's all open source.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
They get no benefit.
That's true.
I mean, the truth is, though, like that the best Android experience is AOSP plus GMS,
yes.
Right? I mean,
minus cruft from other manufacturers.
Right, exactly. Right.
Google's done a good job of getting rid of
it, yes.
Yeah, right. Just plus only GMS, right? You don't even want the other crap.
Amen.
Right? And this is true because Google shepherded AOSP along. They went all in on Android and they said, we're going to build, this is the platform we're going to put out. We're going to build our great experiences on top of it, much like they did with Chrome. And no other company has had this sort of head start, and you know, no other company has kind of had this vision. I mean, I would love to see two companies, and maybe it's Google and Amazon working on the AOSP actively. In public, I want to see nightly commits. Why hasn't location services been updated? Is that Google's responsibility? It's an open source application. It's everybody's responsibility. Anybody can update location services. So when people throw accusations at Google saying, well, they haven't updated the mail client on AOSP for 2 years, and why should they? Because they want you to use the Gmail, and that means that they're evil. I kind of feel like, well, you know, theoretically, if it's open source, anybody can hack the email client and make it better, submit patches back, and get those, you know, brought into the open source project, and so everyone can benefit. I mean, that's what open source is.
So that's the question. Has Amazon, for instance, contributed back to the AOSP?
So I asked Jason Applebaum last night this, because he follows AOSP development more closely than I do, and he says that yes, there have been committers back to AOSP from other companies.
Good.
Plenty of them.
Good.
More I think the low level pieces of the operating system, but yeah,
including Amazon.
I believe so, Chad.
I mean, this is the proof in the pudding. If Nokia contributes back to AOSP, everybody wins, right?
Yeah.
Then that's great.
Yeah.
His argument was, though, you know, he knows, he's like, you know, there's at least one bug, major bug that I know of that has been fixed multiple times, right, by different people, and and the fix has never been pulled back, right? Because what is it's in your interest to have the fix in your software versus everybody having the fix in their software. Now, that totally goes against the whole spirit of open source, right, is that you're contributing back and that, you know, stone soup that everyone is contributing and making easier and better for everyone. But, you know, there's not a whole lot of easy ways to enforce that. And, you know, you need a leader who is encouraging that and people who are helping out with that. So that's sad to hear. I mean, I'd like to see more of, there's a major bug with location services that doesn't make it as good as GMS. Let's just make location services as good as GMS.
Yeah. I think what happens, this is another case of the truth maybe not matching the narrative that people want to or expect, where, you would expect Google to be churlish, the dog in the manger, and say, well, you know, we don't want anybody to fork. But in fact, maybe they have been generous, and maybe it is possible to fork AOSP.
It's this default position of what's Google doing badly?
Right.
You know, I know I'm going to come off as the fanboy once again, but so often when that question is asked, the answer is, oh, nothing.
Well, we'll watch with great interest. This will be a good litmus test for that, for all of that, and how good a neighbor Nokia / Microsoft is. Apparently, Nokia has, somebody in the chat room said, Nokia has been a huge contributor to the Linux open source repositories.
They're neighbors.
But remember, that's Nokia. Now they're Nokia Microsoft, or soon they will be Nokia Microsoft. We'll see what happens there. I don't know if Microsoft contributes much back. to open source?
I don't know. I mean, IBM, we talked about last week how Microsoft becomes the new IBM, and in some ways,
right.
You know, IBM certainly
benefited doing that. There certainly are developers at Microsoft who work in their spare time in open source, and I would think would love Microsoft to contribute back.
I think at this point, any big software company, just for the purpose of winning developer hearts,
yes.
has to have some money and some resources dedicated toward contributing back to beloved projects that we all use.
That's the
like
right
Linux.
Thing to do.
It is.
Yeah. Web 0844 is pointing out that Nokia had MIMO and MIGO, which were Linux-based phone operating systems, unfortunately orphaned. But that's where a lot of that development contributed back. So really, Nokia's done this before. They've taken the Linux kernel and put a phone on top of it. So it may not be such a stretch for them to do that. Nest is final. FTC approval. Google owns them. Interesting that Google also owns a fairly big stake in Lenovo now. Not merely thanks to the fact that they sold Motorola to Lenovo, partly for cash, but partly for stock. But after the deal closes, they'll own $750 million Lenovo dollars worth of Lenovo.
So does that still put them in the same conflict that they were in before in terms of the other hardware makers?
It's a 5.94% stake. So it's, I don't know. Sarah's the finance person. Is that a big enough stake to say for people like HTC and Samsung to say, oh, Google's still in the phone business?
It's 5.94?
Yeah. It's not a majority. It's not a significant. I mean, it's big.
Yeah. I'm guessing every company has its own standard on that. I mean, it's not a regulatory issue.
Right.
No.
Well, and it's on the Hong Kong exchange because that's where Lenovo is traded. Twitter. Guys, did you go to Twitter too?
We did. We got to sit down with Dick Costolo,
CEO of Twitter.
Nice. CEO of Twitter.
And former CEO of Twitter, Ed Williams, about Medium.
Yep.
Tell us about your trip, then we'll take a break, then we'll wrap it up because we're almost out of time.
Well, I'm new on my job. I'm like 5 weeks old as a dean. And I figured, why not grab Jeff Jarvis and come out to the West Coast and be a reporter?
What fun.
Basically go around talking to the big executives who are leading technology companies here and find out how we can work better with them as a journalism school, what their thoughts are about journalism education, what our students need to learn how to do in order to be successful as our industries kind of converge. So
you focused on journalism. I mean, certainly
the intersection of journalism and technology.
Medium is a journalistic enterprise. Twitter is not, but has some impact, significant
impact.
Huge impact.
Actually, I mean, there's some discussion about whether Medium is indeed a journalistic enterprise. I think some of the conversation this morning with them was really about it's a technology company, primarily, that loves stories.
Ideas.
And they're not out to save journalism.
But they see themselves as a back end for some form of journalism.
Mm-hmm. A platform.
Mm-hmm. A platform.
Not new, I think what Ev would say is not breaking news ever. Because he said we read too much news. He said this out loud.
He doesn't want to do that.
He's done that. Twitter did that. He's basically balancing his own invention of Twitter, I think.
It feels like a return to Blogger in some ways.
But more to it, I think. They want to have the finest content creation tool they can have. And they're a long way on that. It's a beautiful, elegant
tool.
You've
submitted a lot of stuff.
I've used a lot. I'm writing a new white paper on, the future of news.
Why would you submit anything to Medium instead of onto your own blog?
Well, he writes about it on the blog, too. It's not mutually exclusive.
Distribution, right? Distribution.
Yeah, so, the thing about Medium from the very beginning, and I said this to Ev when he first showed it to me, is that I find that when I start writing something on Medium, it raises the bar immediately on what I would write there. And so I'm writing something that's more thoughtful, cared for.
Maybe polished.
Polished, yeah. Than, certainly Twitter or my blog. Now, Ev kind of said that he wants us to explore ideas there and do things there. But I, there's the kind of little for the record post. Oh, I think this or that, and it's over. I don't want to put that in Medium. Medium, you put a thought that you're working on, and he wants it to be collaborative, so you work with people.
I think that's a key difference.
Instead of just on my blog all by myself, how is it collaborative?
And comments at the end.
Comments on the side.
But I take comments on my blog. I mean,
comments by every idea, and you can get into a conversation
People can
idea.
Kind of annotate your piece. Ooh, that's interesting.
And so you could ask a question. You could leave a TK.
Some people
as we
wouldn't
say,
want that.
No, some people wouldn't. Well, in fact, Medium, the first time I put something up there, they offered to edit it for me, and I said, no, thanks.
So they have editors.
They do have editors,
well,
they
aren't just a technology company.
Well, we asked them what they are, and you know, everybody's choking on this word that was on Recode this week. Of a platisher, a platform publisher, which is publisher just god-awful.
Yeah, when I saw that, I decided not to.
I couldn't finish reading it just because every time platisher. I hit that word, it was as if I was going over a bridge.
It's like Gesundheit.
Yeah. No, I think Medium sees itself clearly as, Sarah said, a technology company and a platform. Twitter is still a platform. Now, part of the reason that I'm here, just my own hidden agenda to all this, is that I think we've got to convince the titans of technology industry that when they start to want to save news, they don't make it a contribution. They bring their best thoughts to it. They bring their technology and business experience to it and not give up on it. And so that's what I want to do with the technology folks I'm seeing this week is to say, no, the things that you know how to do in big technology, we need that in news and journalism.
Yes.
As opposed to just going straight to a sort of nonprofit solution.
Right.
And a charity.
Well,
because it's not sustainable.
Pierre Omidyar launched The Intercept.
Yes, he did.
The very much commercialization of news. He's put $250 million apparently into it and brought Glenn Greenwald and Laura Fitton over. In fact, they also brought that big stash of Snowden documents along with them. Some have complained that that is the monetization of the Snowden documents. Others have vociferously denied.
Greenwald has. In the meantime, he has shared some documents with NBC this week, did some things. So I think he's trying to spread the load.
Yeah.
So I don't yet know. I tried to talk to Omidyar, and I'm eager to talk to him about what his business model is. I'm not sure that he knows yet what it is. We've talked about Bezos on the show before.
With the Washington Post.
I really hope he doesn't view it as a philanthropy, but instead sees it as an opportunity to change the business models.
Yeah.
There was an incredible exchange this week. Absolutely amazing. Old P. Marca. Mark Andreessen on Twitter has been going berserk all week in a wonderful way about the journalism business. And
I was wondering why everybody I know suddenly followed P. Marca. Now
that's
I understand.
Yeah. Save us! Save us, Mark!
What did he say? Mark Andreessen, for those who don't know, is a guy who wrote Netscape or helped write Netscape, made a lot of money, and is now a venture capitalist at Andreessen.
Of major note. And he's true to my heart. He's saying that journalism can be a business. Now, he's excited about crowdfunding, which I think is one revenue stream, and it's by no means a salvation. But he's yelling at the people, and this part I love, who say, no, journalism is give up on it. It's not profitable. It's meant to be a charity. And he's saying, no, it was a badly run business. I hear people saying that.
Yeah.
A lot of my journalism friends are communists.
We love stories, and the people who can tell stories – all journalism is telling a story about something that happened so that people understand it better, right?
Well, that's one form of it. I think the other forms include data.
I shouldn't
data.
Say that to the professors here. Yes. They probably will spank me for saying that. But it strikes me that that's what we need is we need the story. We understand things in terms of story. Humans do.
Many of my professors would say the same thing. I argue that stories are only one tool we have, and we're not primarily storytellers.
What's the other story? What's the other way to do it?
Data. Tools
yeah, but
that get
raw
data,
data is not as valuable as. In fact,
depends
that's
on what you're looking for.
But if you give me the raw data, that's one thing. If you explain the raw data, i.e., tell a story about it,
I'll give you an example. After Hurricane Sandy, or tomorrow, after whatever Weather Channel is calling the next storm to hit Gina, we'll get stories. You know what the stories will say? I could write them right now. Gosh, a lot of snow fell. City digging out. On TV, they're going to put rulers in the snow and say, guess what? It adds up over time. They're going to tell us all this,
so what would you like?
Know. I want a tool that says what streets are open, what streets are closed, and I want that data to come from.
Is that
from.
Journalism?
Yes, you bet it is. It enables a community to share what it knows. That's journalism. Okay. Would you agree, boss?
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of some of the thinking that we're doing right now is should we be teaching our students how to be community organizers, basically to engage individual communities and help provide information that helps them organize themselves. And
that's very interesting.
That's sort of a new...
But that's a broader definition than the tradition.
It is.
Yes.
With nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, I don't.
I mean, I've been writing this...
That's a librarian.
No, it's a platform maker.
That stopped us in our tracks. Who are you calling librarian?
Librarians, Mista.
Okay.
Meanwhile, we want to destroy some things. I part of the reason that I wanted to bring especially Sarah here was to look at the wonders that are TWiT and reinventing TV news. which I think is vital.
Well, I'm never doing another stand-up. I can tell you that after reading your blog.
There's a very funny Fox 5 video on there of a guy who, I think it's the top one.
Because you got interviewed by Fox.
By Fox 5 New York about the stupid things they do in weather stories.
I'm surprised that they wanted to do that story, to be honest with you. But that seems self-defeating.
Yeah.
Chad will have to play it. I don't have the capability of playing videos back in.
Yeah, what happened to your laptop?
My daughter has it.
Ah.
She's using it for work.
During the Chrysler presidency.
This is an ad, unfortunately. But
sorry about that. I should have warned you, Chad.
It's all right. I like Dwight David Eisenhower. I particularly liked Robin Williams' rendition of Dwight David Eisenhower in The Butler. Did you see that?
No.
Very weird. It's not the first person I'd have Robin Williams play.
Even we get sick of hearing our own voices sometimes. Local news really can be a bit much. We know that.
Without this is a local news guy.
You know what we are talking about, obviously. There are silly stories, pointless live shots, endless cliches, and then there's Joel Waldman.
Joining us from outside our building. Perfect.
I couldn't resist. You're
putting
perfect for the story.
Putting the hand to the earpiece so we can hear the anchor.
What's the lower third?
Joel,
inside? Outside.
I didn't see that.
In case you weren't
Stephen
there,
I love putting my hand up to my earpiece here, otherwise known as an IFB for all of you at home who didn't know this. Look behind me over here at Fox 5 News. There's absolutely nothing going on right now. So we decided to turn it all around, forego Snowmageddon, and tell all you concerned citizens at home exactly what annoys you and us most about this job.
Time. We never have enough.
A shocking revelation. Thanks, local news. If you think it isn't, think again. Time is valuable.
Honestly, who has time to waste?
Maybe you do if you're watching this right now. For the first time ever, in this exclusive local news story, we ask the tough question. Does news ever annoy you? We put CUNY professor Jeff Jarvis on the hot seat to give this story at least an ounce of legitimacy.
Doing a story about local TV news is a bit navel-gazing, but it's a good start because it shows me that you're willing to ask the tough questions about what's annoying about TV news.
Like sticking rulers.
Almost an inch and a half.
Not an inch and a half. And please, no more.
Wicked winter weather.
Gimmicks. Thanks for that cliche, reporter man. And please stop, reporter woman.
I've got this wind meter right here.
The winds are literally ripping across.
If you think this station had enough reporters covering its city's severe weather its first night, this was the second. At Times and News, we come across another chilling reality. Reporters stretching the truth.
Are these holy men walking on top of water?
Holy smokes, a canoe in just a few inches of water. I don't know, but I've never wanted to knee anchors as badly as during these recent blasts of cold Arctic air.
All right, we get the idea. Yeah. We don't have to keep going.
Give me Will Ferrell.
That's good. I like that. Yeah, that's funny. I don't think they're going to stop doing stand-ups. I would defend the stand-up. But
okay. All right, try.
Well, again, this comes back. I understand now why you guys don't want to accept the fact that really what we are is storytellers, because that allows some subjectivity to creep into
it. Subjectivity is great.
You want
I love subjectivity.
Facts. But the fact is the human brain wants people. They want faces. They want pictures. This is one of the reasons why I was reluctant to do video. Video is, it's very clear to me. The audio is intellectual. It's abstract. It's ideas. Video is all about emotions. Video wants pictures and wants, and so for television news to abandon the stand-up would be, you know, what do you get? You get, you know, the McNeil Lehrer news report, news hour. You get
PBS
news hour.
But you also could get more information. You get more value.
Well, but people don't. Well, got bad news for you. People don't want that.
The example.
What is the job of the journalist to are
inform.
We the Brussels sprouts of media, or are we here to help people understand stuff in a way that is palatable? I would rather be a Egg McMuffin with some broccoli in there than to be just the broccoli on the plate.
I can't think of any food analogy here, but I mean, it's not, again, it's sort of not one thing or the other. You know, I mean,
you go right ahead and be deep data. I don't care.
No, I mean, it's a mix of things. There's sometimes when I want to analyze data. There's sometimes when I want to have a story that moves me. There's sometimes when I want some deep, complex analysis. There's sometimes when I want breaking news. I mean, those are all forms of journalism. They're all critical.
I'm just saying you understand why local news has a ruler in the snow. That's real.
Yeah,
physical.
Yeah, yeah.
It tells people what's going on.
But here's
a wind meter.
Here's the example.
They shouldn't lie about a rowboat in 3 inches of water. That's stupid. No. That is bad.
But there's also stupid. I have pictures on the blog of people standing up in front of the George Washington Bridge and the Christie scandal we have in New Jersey.
Right.
There's no journalism to be had there.
No, right? Of course
there's
not.
There's no officials there. There's no victims there.
Pictures.
There's no sources there.
If you do TV, I'm sorry, you have to have pretty pictures.
You don't think Chris Christie's pretty?
No. Yeah, he's pretty. I would have a picture of Chris Christie. In fact, I'd have him on there, of course. You want TV?
Give you another example. Another example.
You have a as soon as you go to video, you have a responsibility to fill the screen. Responsibility to fill the screen with something, and you might as well make it pretty.
Ooh, well, okay. So there's a jury out in the trial.
Doesn't mean you can't have solid information. So what I think is very important, and I know you guys teach this, is that there be this very solid foundation of journalistic ethics where you don't make up stories, you don't fudge things, you don't attempt to prove a point by editing. You care most and most deeply about communicating to your audience the truth about a story to give them the information they need to make the judgment that they need to make as good citizens.
And all you do that, the things that are in the service of that.
Yes. All of that we agree, and that is the foundation of what you teach.
Right.
So all we're disagreeing about is how you present it. And I would say that sometimes you want to present it with a little bit of
let me give you another example. So the jury is out in a trial. I use this example in the blog. And what do? The anchor says, the trial's going on. This is what happened in the trial. Now we're going to go to the, you know, Gina Trapani in the paneled courtroom. Gina Trapani is going to say, in that closed door behind me, there's a jury. We don't know what the F they're doing. I actually have nothing to say to you. But, yeah, the trial's going on. It's about this and that and that. Now back to you. The anchor comes back and says, you know, we'll tell you as soon as we hear anything. All of which can be summarized in, jury's still out. For more, go to the web. And then they could get another story in. They get more value in. It's a waste of precious journalistic resource. The reporters don't report. They are props.
I would question whether how precious that resource is. There's a lot of people that you could put out there with the camera operator. That stuff's not precious. That's what TV news does. And I would just say that if you did this imaginary TV news station that you would like to do, no one would freaking watch it. And part of your mandate is not merely to tell the truth and get the story out, but to get somebody to watch it.
But nobody's watching it now. No. I mean, the numbers...
Only because there's other places you can have people standing
right,
in front
of it. But I mean, I don't know. You have kids. I have kids. Yeah. They don't watch...
They watch YouTube.
They watch, you know, any news that they're getting, on the laptop.
That there's stuff on YouTube that is any less... YouTube's full of stuff as stupid as the guy standing out there with
it. But it's not trying to be news.
It's presentational. If you look at the presentation on YouTube... A lot of attention to presentation, otherwise nobody watches it. Watch Epic Mealtime, which has no content.
Do we have to?
Yeah, has no content. My son loves it because of what they're seeing and doing. He loves. They're mushing the hamburgers into a giant lasagna.
Here's where I'm going. I think the conflation of informing and entertaining is the issue. Now, that's usually said in terms of, it's crappy TV. What I'm trying to say is something different. Is that if I want to read a novel, that's entertainment. If I want to read a long New Yorker story, that's often entertainment. Snowfall, the Times did, that everybody loved, was really, to me, entertainment because I don't
that
like
was
heights.
A waste of time. As much as everybody loved it, that was a waste of time.
And money.
And a lot of money. And I would, and this is very not politically correct, I would complain far more about that than some idiot anchor with nice hair standing out in the rain. That is a bigger waste of money and resources that added nothing to the conversation.
And I think there's ways that we could probably inform you. When I had my coffee with Katie Couric.
did you mention this to Katie?
I'd
be curious what she thought.
I wanted to know how long it was going to take you to get
I know,
that
it's been
in.
A while.
It was a little bit longer than I thought.
Here we are, the show's almost over.
It's
going to
be too long this week. So one thing I said was the one difference I see in going to Yahoo is you don't have to fill a clock anymore. Right, we overfill the clock here at Twit, but you don't
never
have
never had any problem filling the clock. Yeah.
You don't have to fill the clock anymore, and if you want to say what's new in a story, you can do that in 1:30, and then not have to say anything more until something actually happens. So part of what TV does is think we have to have video because we have to fill an hour. Well, if you instead your job is to inform people, maybe you can do that in 1:30.
Boy, my experience of television is very different from that. In fact, my experience of television was that we never had enough time, that there was always the urgency to get stuff done in less time, and that hurt TV more than anything else. Mm-hmm. That's where you edit out the pieces of him downloading the malware, because you don't want that information, because it takes too much time. There is never enough time in mainstream media.
Then why did they waste so much of it on idiots standing up where nothing happened in the last 12 hours?
I don't think they consider that wasted. I think they consider that the way that they make a palatable product. But
that's my problem, is that's the orthodoxy of old TV. This is the way we make TV. Things. It's got to be the only way because it's the way we've always done it. And I'm saying, I want you know what you're going to do?
What?
I'm bringing you to New York. We're having an event at CUNY in reinventing TV
news. We should
TV
have a debate.
And now I'm going to have you in a hacking TV event.
I feel like I want to argue the case for the average Joe who sits down in front of the TV. And I understand what you need to do on television. You need to make, which we don't do here, but you need to make pretty pictures.
I think you're the proof that you don't need to.
You need to make emotional
stuff. You physically are the proof that you don't need pretty pictures.
That's why we have Gina, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Gina Trapani.
Jeff, I really liked, I thought that you were bringing up Circa was really apt. Circa's that news app. I love it. I love it. I barely look at it, but it notifies me when I need, so you can follow a story and it notifies me when there's something new, right? And when there's an update to the story. And I really like that. And I like that your point that, you know, the way that TV news works now is that it's just people explaining the same, you know, thing, the same story. If you have all the background, you're just hearing the same thing repeated over and over and over again. But what you really want is just to know, did the jury come back? What was the verdict?
I'm glad you raised that.
Don't tell me whether or not, only tell me if they have, right? I don't want to hear anything else.
We went to visit Circa this week as well. And they make a big point of that, saying that once you already know enough in the story, then all you want is the update. Then you want to follow the story. That's a new opportunity we didn't have in big old news.
You know, Circa came out of Ben Ha of I Can Has Cheeseburger actually saying, I think we need to rethink how we deliver journalism. In fact, I remember going to food camp. He was there. Were you at that food camp, Gene?
I wasn't. We went back to the cottage and did the show with him afterwards.
Yeah. And I remember him.
He had demoed it. Yeah.
Before he did Circa, he said, I want to talk with you about what's wrong with journalism, what's wrong with news, and how we can do a better job. And Circa, I think, is quite successful, but it's a different thing. I mean, connected devices are a little different. They are more goal oriented than sitting down in front of a television or
Leo,
even watching
you questioned the orthodoxy of television. You blew up the orthodoxy of television, yet here you are defending it to me.
I am defending it because it works really well. I hate to tell you. Here's the bad news. It's working.
The audience is dying.
By what measure is it working?
Okay. You would say TV news is that thing that's on the box that comes through the air. I would merely say video news, and I would say YouTube counts. In other words, Circa is very different. So there are ways of getting information via web browser and so forth. But I think what succeeds is people like to – this is why we spent $1.5 million to do this. People like to watch video. They like to – the lean back experience is not a dead experience by any means. And in fact, I will give you the measure. People watch more television now than they did 10 years ago. That's the bad news. The number of hours – look it up.
Look at the TV news portion.
And the age thereof.
And the age of the people who are watching TV news. And the portion of the TV news segments that is actually news as opposed to weather
or
sports.
Yeah.
It's really
declining. Well, that I agree with. But that is
how
the
much
failure
of, it is
of local news. That is the failure of local news. Local news has always been horrific.
Well, that's really what we're focusing on.
Yeah, I would agree with you. But I don't think the stand-up is the problem there.
I
think the biggest problem with that is underestimating the intelligence of your audience. And this comes, again, from many
rulers
years.
In the snow.
I have worked for all the networks, and I know they don't want you to think of the audience as intelligent. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a mistake, if you ask me, because guess what you get?
Stupidity.
People. this has nothing to do with Google. Hi, Gina. How are you? How's thing up going?
Can I just say that there was someone in the chat room who said he wanted or she wanted to go for wood paneling based on this? So.
I think this is
You're changing.
Says something about the twit, the twig.
What do you think? What do you think of Yahoo's effort at news? This is a very good example of Yahoo assuming people are not too bright. So this every morning I get, this is the newest thing from Yahoo. It is a total of 9 stories. Okay, in 9 different categories. I can interact with it, and presumably it will update it. And then at the bottom, it's gamified. You've read 0.
You schmuck, you.
We'll send you kittens the more you click.
Yeah, but there is real news here. New Orleans Mayor Katrina Eric convicted on corruption charges. Senate approves debt limit. Now, when I go to this is the product they bought from that kid who was doing summaries.
Yes.
He was summarizing news. So when I go to it, I don't get the actual canonical article here. I get a computer-generated summary of the stuff you need to know. Although, I have to say, it's not so bad. And then I can get additional stuff, tweets and so forth, down here. I think this is an interesting look. I'm surprised you guys haven't seen this. Derek Jeter will retire after. Now, this is the sports section, right? So this is a summary, not from any one source, but summarized by Yahoo, summarized programmatically.
Of course, it didn't take long for Calacanis to copy this, too.
Oh, Jason has no new ideas. That's obvious.
wow.
Big picture. Well, he hasn't. He just copies everything, right?
Actually, I had a conversation this week with the club of people who've been copied by Jason.
It's
of
a big
you
club.
Are a major
it's
member
a fairly
of
fairly large club.
Yes, it is.
You? And I, you know what? I actually like Jason Calacanis, but that's a fact. There's no way around that. So that's another way to do news. I just think that when we use these devices, it's more goal-oriented than when we
that's
watch
a good
TV.
Point.
My goal when I watch TV is sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Which is part of what Sarah's saying. That's why pictures. And the young people don't do that.
Yes, they do. They just do it on YouTube. So you know how my son
that's
consumes
not the
YouTube?
Back thing.
That's a different model. Different
you know how my son
model.
Consumes YouTube? On the big screen TV, he's got it hooked up to the Apple TV, and they just go through clips and they watch it. That all that is they're programming their own TV.
Yeah,
but they're not,
but
still
it's not
lean
with
back.
Local news, you know, produced by local.
No, affiliate. The only time they watch local news is when there's gaffes.
Yes,
yes,
they quite which, enjoy that. Yeah, which there are many.
Which there are many.
yeah, that was the Yahoo News app that I was showing there for those of you who wanted to try that themselves. I like Circa a lot. I like the Yahoo mm-hmm. News app a lot. But I do feel like how we use news on these devices is very
different. That's
it's very goal-oriented. Right?
I love this discussion, and we're gonna have it again. I warn you.
Our show today brought to you by, coming up, our tips and tools and numbers of the week. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace. A better web awaits. I loved their Super Bowl commercial, filled with all the junky memes of the internet. Click here, you know, lose 50 pounds in 50 minutes, all that stuff. And Squarespace is saying essentially this, that the web has become this spam cluttered space, but Squarespace lets you change that with an elegant, simple design that lets you make your website stand out, website look good. I just saw that Matt Cutts has said that they're going to downgrade on Google search sites that have too many ads on the page, two big ads at the front. They're going to get fewer search results. He's saying effectively, Google's saying, we want more content. A Squarespace site is going to give you great SEO. In fact, they do support all the things Google asks you to do, like a sitemap and so forth, automatically. Their design's fantastic. 25 templates to start with. They just added a tool that's so cool to design logos. If you're a small business and you don't have the resources to do it, they've arranged to get all the Google fonts, hundreds of fonts, and then all the icons. And you could do your own logo. It's so cool. The icons come from, I can't remember where, but there's several hundred of them. It's very easy to use, but if you have any trouble at all, they've got live chat and email support 24/7 and a completely redesigned customer help site with lots of self-help articles, video workshops. Hey, I like that. Twit, we're what's for dinner. How about that? That's good. And it's very affordable. All the plans now have e-commerce. In fact, you can do not only sell merchandise, but you can accept donations. So this is great. If you're a podcast and you want to crowdsource it, if you're a nonprofit, if you're getting married and you want, you know, instead of that silk bag they had in The Godfather with the people giving money in there, you can just do it on the website, cash wedding registry, school fund drives. I come to you on the day of my daughter's wedding. It starts at $8 a month. It includes that free domain name when you sign up for a year. I want you to try it. They have a new metric app. I forgot to mention that. It allows you to check site stats. The blog app is gorgeous. It's the hosting. It's the software. And it's as low as $8 a month. And they got e-commerce too. Start with a free 2-week trial. You don't need a credit card. Just go to squarespace.com. Click the Get Started button. When you decide to sign up, make sure you use our offer code so you get 10% off. That's TWIG and the number 2, Twig 2. I just go there now and set up a site. Just play with it. It's free. You don't even need to give them any credit card or any information. Just squarespace.com. But do use Twig 2 when you decide to sign up. We're going to wrap things up as we always do. Gina Trapani with a tip of the week.
So I'll admit, I held this back from the changelog because I wanted to be my tip.
That's fair. You want to do this in front of the building with a microphone? And
where's the ruler? I want you with a yardstick in the snow tomorrow, Gina.
I want to be. I got to be standing. I got to go to Mountain View and stand outside with the Android robots before I do for the step.
I like that.
So, yeah, there you go. So this is an Android tip. Google's voice search on Android now lets you set and refer to a relationship in your contacts. So you have your mom in your contacts as her full name. You can say to Google Voice Search, call mom. And you haven't set the relationship, Google now will say, well, who's your mom? And you tap in your contacts who it is. And then from there on in, you can just say, call mom.
Work can I get for, it to say, who's wife. Your daddy?
Yeah. Yes. You say, call my wife. You can call my brother.
Call daddy.
So, yeah, to do this, you just open Google Now, you tap the microphone button, and or you use OK Google hot word, and then just say, call my, and then name a relationship, brother, sister, wife, mother.
Called you.
And then you can select who that is. Do it.
I've been meaning, I can't do a Star Wars thing.
I am your father.
I am your father.
So, you know, we were talking about this last night and all about Android. I tried this and I realized that I actually listed my mom as mom in my contacts. So that didn't work. So then I tried my brother, but I have two of those. So that didn't work. But it will work if you just don't want to say the name of your family.
I used to work for a nefarious mogul named Robert Maxwell, who bought the New York Daily News.
Oh, yeah.
And he went overboard in more ways than one, overboard on his yacht and his finances. And he used to come into town in his private jet, and he would set up at the Waldorf Astoria. And one of the people I know knew at the Daily News, who was a woman who was 6'2", he called Tiny, would sit in the outer office, and he would sometimes just call out, and he would say, Tiny, get me the dickhead. And
that's better than Siri.
Tiny would sit there and say, uh-oh, who's the dickhead this week?
Oh.
I don't know who it is. I think it's him, but I'm not sure. Now, if I connect him, if I ask him, I'm going to get fired because I'll be the new dickhead.
Right.
And I'm going to connect it. And you know what? By the time it connects, Leo may not be the dickhead, but he is now.
It could change. Yeah.
So I like that. Now I get to do this on Android.
Wow.
Yeah.
Google now.
Siri's done this for a while. In fact, you can line up your relationships and your iPhone contact list and use those and call my sister, call my mom, whatever you want. But this is new in Google.
Yep.
So I noticed that when the first time I said call my daddy, it said, would you like to turn on the enhanced contact recognition? So you'd have to do
that.
Wow.
Oh, that's very sophisticated.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Nice. Okay.
So I don't know if call my daddy. It says this device. Oh, it doesn't have a phone.
Oh, so
here. Wait. Okay, because I really wanted to say, "Who's your daddy?" I really do.
Go ahead.
It won't say that aloud, but it will.
Oh, it doesn't say it out loud. Yeah, oh well.
It doesn't say it aloud. It
that, by the way, what you just saw is the equivalent of a reporter's stand-up. It's a little. You're just against like little fun stuff. It's fun stuff.
No. Jeff Jarvis is not against fun stuff. I'm sorry.
We hear it
here
first.
You're the wrong guy.
We now know the truth. All right. Very good. Is that it?
It'll prompt you to choose from your contacts. It won't say who's your daddy. Okay. So sorry to disappoint on that one. But yeah, that's it. That's it for my tip.
I love it.
That would have been a great Easter egg.
Yeah. You know what Siri says when you say, what does the fox say?
No, what does
it say? Well, I have to have an iPhone. It says what the fox says. Kiri, 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 kiri. I have it on my iPad. Let's see if it's... What does the fox say?
Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha.
What does the fox say?
Fracka-cackle-cackle-cackle-cow.
And on and on and on. Take that, Google. Let's see you do that. What does the fox say?
Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cow.
Actually, as soon as I said, take that, Google, this thing beeped. So I get it's out of control. It's out of control.
You're robots.
Yes. Your number of the week, my friend.
All right. Well, so the New York Post, speaking of press moguls with bad reputations, reports that Eric Schmidt has bought a mansion in L.A.
Oh.
Formerly owned by Gregory Peck's widow, Veronique Peck.
Wait a minute. You're missing the point of the headline. Buys new home near the Playboy Mansion.
Yes, I was getting there. Yes. That's the New York Post angle.
Oh, my God. It's in L.A. It's near the Playboy Mansion.
Yeah. And yeah, they say that he's a the tech ladies man.
Well, didn't they give him a hard time about his apartment in New York City? And
was that
him or who was that? I thought it was Eric. They or was it? I don't know if it was the Post though that did it. So it was in a nice neighborhood.
Yeah. So it's 22. Reportedly, says the Post, if you believe the Post, $22 million mansion on 1.3 acres, built in 32.
Does it have a grotto?
I don't know. It has abundant patio space, expansive park-like grounds, and manicured gardens and a pool.
Wow. That's nice. $24
million. $22 million. He got a bargain.
Once belonged to Gregory Peck's ex. Okay. I don't have a tool off to hand, but I thought maybe Sarah, if there's anything you'd like to contribute.
I didn't warn her. I'm in trouble now. I didn't warn her.
What do you want? I could show a really...
You want an app?
Yeah. What's your favorite app?
I like Scanner Pro. That's my label.
I love Scanner Pro.
See? You didn't warn me, but
Sarah
showed off to me
yesterday. I had no idea.
It is a great app. I agree with you. And how do you scan receipts and stuff?
Well, when you get stuck, like I had to sign a letter, and my daughter had her tonsils out, so I was in the hospital, and I found out I had to sign the letter and get it to someone back at the school in like half an hour.
Yep.
So I just scanned it in the hospital.
Scanned your signature.
Send it, and off we go.
It really handy, and it works. Yeah. That's an Android app that I have used for a long time, Scanner Pro.
I don't know if it's Android. I hate to admit this, but I have an iPhone.
I think it's both.
am I still allowed on the
like
show?
This?
You're not going to be allowed in Mountain View, that's all. Okay.
There's another one. Maybe it's just called Scanner.
There's a handy Scanner Pro on the Play Store.
No, there's one that I use on Android. I do use Scanner Pro on the Mac and the iPhone, and that's why I'm confused. But there is a very good scanning app on Android, which I will.
And then there's Vibes, right? Vibes. I mean, I didn't want to bring that up again, but
I'd like to tell you about a little something I've been using. I'm using it right now.
Who knew that New York Tech meetup could be so exciting?
Wow.
I'm so glad that you were here, Sarah, to
share.
To believe me. I'm glad that I've got backup.
Yeah, we
got
to share, right?
Yes.
Open source that app.
Yeah. Let me just...
I'm sure their hits are just going off the charts after this show.
Well, Twit does that.
We can actually bring this site down if we really try hard enough.
Yeah.
Let's see if it's still up. I don't want to say it that way. I'm sorry.
Really, that was a bad call there.
It's called Scan from Scan Incorporated, QR and barcode reader. Very similar to, and you can use it the same way. But it's unfortunately it's $1.99, but it is on sale right now. So
that's okay.
This is particularly for QR codes, but anyway.
But it'll also do paper.
Well, actually, you know what? Now I'm thinking it doesn't.
Oh.
I think it's just it's the QR and barcode scanner.
Ah, never mind.
I like it a little bit better than the one. You know, every time I'd use the Google authorization app, Authenticator, it says install this other app for scanning, which I don't like. So I've used Scan instead. I think we're out of time. How long has this show been? This is a lot of fun, Sarah Bartlett.
Yeah, you're going to get it. You're going to get it.
Was Sarah Barton like a famous, I'm thinking of a famous actress in the 20s, I think. Anyway, but Sarah Barton.
Too young to know.
Yeah, you do. We wouldn't know that, but I do remember that. Thank you so much for being here. Dean of Journalism at the Journalism School at the City University of New York. And Jeff's boss, titular boss, actual boss.
Actual boss. Oh, yeah.
Hard to believe.
I know. I say that every day.
Jeff Jarvis, also here, professor of journalism.
Always wonderful to be here.
You know, I think it's so interesting to see what's going on in journalism, and it really is a much broader field than I had imagined. It's not like, here's how you get a job at the local paper or local TV station or radio. It's much, much broader.
No, our students do get those jobs.
Yeah, but they also can work in the library.
They can start
new
businesses.
So that's good, yeah. Gina Trapani, thinkup.com, soon open to the public.
Yes, indeed.
Sarah Bernhardt is who I was thinking of. So nice to have you.
Great to be here, as always.
Google.com/plus Gina Trapani or Gina Trapani on Twitter. And, of course, don't forget, Gina is so great on All About Android every Tuesday night. At 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern time on this network. In fact, we're thinking of, I love the app Arena so much. We're thinking of not taking it off the show, but just editing and putting it out as an app show with maybe a little additional stuff. Because it's the greatest way to learn about Android apps. I just love that.
Right. That'd be awesome. Yeah, I love the Arena.
You know, you should also take the changelog every week and make it its own video.
Yeah, well, now you're talking.
Ah. yeah, right? Interesting.
Now you're cooking with gas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Gina.
Sweet. Thank you.
Thank your mom. Thank Nona.
Good luck with the snow.
Yeah.
I will, yeah.
So when's that coming? Soon?
Tonight to tomorrow. Tonight. Tonight, all day tomorrow into Friday morning.
Gina, I think next week you should be standing outside the building.
With a ruler, preferably.
Thanks to everyone for joining us with this show. 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2100 UTC on twit.tv. If you watch live, you get to participate in the chat room and see all the stuff we edit out later. If you can't watch live on-demand audio and video, always available after the fact, twit.tv/twig, or you can subscribe and get it automatically in iTunes and all the other, podcast and netcast programs. We're also on YouTube. Is it youtube.com/thisweek in Google, I bet?
I think it's youtube.com/twig.
Is it?
Actually.
We got Twig? Oh, yeah. That's nice. So we put it up there just, in case you want to watch it there. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Twig.